Peter, Mike. Message 4. 214. 214. 11. Group. End. 15. Group. Attention. 214. 214. 11. Group. 99901. 99901. 78151. 78151.
Quench yourself and drink the water of lot of thumbing and kicking cans, and it wouldn't do an ounce of good to call my name. 'Cause daddy's name wasn't Willie Woodrow, and I wasn't born and raised in no ghetto, just a white boy looking for a place to do my thing. Well, I'm out to find me a wealthy woman in a line of work that don't take no diploma. I ain't got much to lose, but got a lot to gain. Well, some might call me a good time fella. I ain't black and I ain't a yellow, just a white boy looking for a place to do my thing. Yeah, I don't want no handout living and don't want a part of anything they're giving. I'm proud and white and I got a song to sing. Well, I've said a few things and I'll admit it. If you want to get ahead, you got to hump and get it. I'm a white boy looking for a place to do my thing. Hump and get it now. Been around a little. I like guitars and I like a fiddle, and that's the kind of soul it takes to fan my flame. Well, I'm a blue-eyed Billy, kind of frail and ruddy, so I'll have to work to be somebody. I'm a white boy looking for a place to do my thing. I don't want no handout living and don't want a part of anything they're giving. I'm proud and white and I got a song to sing. Well, I've said a few things and I'll admit it. If you want to get ahead, you got to hump and get it. I'm a white boy looking for a place to do my thing. I'm a white boy looking for a place to do my thing.
Yeah, hey, would you look at that? Little soundy dealy works. I think the mic probably got fucked with again. Is that going to be a new thing? Every time I restart, the microphone levels are going to go crazy? Hello, Testa. That's good enough. Whatever. Well, welcome to the Insomnia Stream. White Bearded Edition. I'm your host, of course, Devin Stack. We had some topical, or not topical, but I guess like news that's happening today to cover real quick before we get into the show. We'll get into this executive order by Trump to protect the Jews, and there's never going to be an executive order to protect white people, just FYI. And there's a lot of cope surrounding this, and a lot of details. People either are, you know, again, a lot of these people that cope and seethe and sweep for Trump, they don't know how to read, it seems. They don't know how to read. So we're going to go over some of the details there. First, a lot of people are probably, you know, talking about this. Just a couple hours ago, I guess, an airplane had an incident in D.C. A regional airliner struck a Blackhawk.
Breaking news. I have called over to my counterparts at the White House, and I can confirm that President Trump has been made aware of this situation. And tragically, it appears that a military helicopter collided with a regional jet at DCA Airport right here in Washington, D.C. That's all I can confirm at this point in time. And I can just say that the thoughts and the prayers of the entire Trump administration are with all those that are involved. And we ask the public in this area to please stand by for guidance from law enforcement and allow them to do their jobs as they attempt to save lives right now.
So here's a video of it. You can see, I'll back it up there, that bright lens flare that you see in the middle of the screen. If you look at it prior to that, well, there's a better quality, but that's the airliner being hit by the helicopter. Here's it zoomed in. Here's the first responders, because they both aircraft landed in the Potomac. This is by Reagan International. Here's a better quality version. It's still tough to see, but there we go. You can see a dot. Headed like I'm scrubbing the timeline. This isn't real time. This is me scrubbing. But you can see that dot going right for... Well, it appears to just go right for the airliner. So I've heard people say, oh, you know, the Black Hawk was running dark. No, it's got like a, you can see the light. I mean, I don't know if it's a landing light or what, I don't know the aviation term for that light, but there's a light blinking. You can see the light blinking on it. And there's obviously some other kind of light because you can see it. It's lit up. That dot's lit up the entire time. It's not a missile. There's people trying to say it's a missile. And look, it's also a overly complicated way to kill someone. For people that are already going Q-tarded with this and saying, there's assassination or whatever. You know, there's way easier ways without putting a fucking airliner in the Potomac to just kill some. Well, who knows? Who knows, right? Who knows? But seems unlikely. And it always, it takes away from just the general reality of things that this very well could turn out to be a diversity hire at air traffic control. We don't know the details. And this had just happened a couple hours ago. Here's another video of it. You can see it. It appears to fly directly into it. You know, so it's right into the flight path. Again, I don't know much about air traffic control. My understanding is it's actually, because at first I was like, well, that's a little weird, right, that you'd have a military craft just crossing through a busy, you know, I don't know what it's called, like the path where in which these airliners go to land, but apparently it's not that unusual. And air traffic control, at least the last time I updated or looked for updates, was recorded warning them 30 seconds prior to the impact to keep an eye out for that airliner and to come in behind the airliner. And it looks like they didn't come in behind the airliner. So I don't know if that's true. That's just the last update I saw. I'm sure we'll get more, but there's not enough to really go over this so much because it just happened. So anything we would just be speculation, which is what leads to Q-tard theories. So we're not going to do that so much. One thing I will say is, look, is it probable? No. Is it possible that it was remotely flown? Yeah, that technology exists. Good old Lockheed Martin.
We're working hand in hand with the Army to modernize Black Hawk, to incorporate new technology, new capabilities to create the Black Hawk of the future. And one critical technology of all these things is autonomy. And that brings me here today.
Are we really going to fly this optimally piloted autonomous Black Hawk?
Oh, black woman.
In Connecticut.
Strong, powerful black woman.
Right here in Washington, D.C. And the answer is a resounding yes, we're going to.
To see the aircraft come
up to stabilize. For all we know, it was literally a strong, powerful black woman with an iPad flying directly into an airliner on accident. I don't know. But that technology exists. Man, I'll tell you, these fucking Lockheed Martin. Every time Lockheed Martin. I went on. Might have been like a Tinder date, but it was like some online date with a chick from Lockheed Martin once. And holy shit, like psychopath, that date was over the moment we started talking about, well, she mentioned she worked at Lockheed Martin, and her brother, I think, was a Marine, he was a Marine, and she said something like, it was right when, I think, Trump was getting elected the first time around, and she hated Trump. But she's like, but the good thing is he'll probably, you know, Republicans usually get us into more wars. So it's more money for me. And I was like, didn't you just say your brother's in the Marines? Anyway, so fucking psychopaths. And by the way, she was a quote unquote engineer. And there ain't no fucking way. She was the pretty girl in the engineering department is what it was. She was the, oh, we won't actually give her any engineering duties, but she's pretty to look at, so we'll keep her around while all like the 50-year-old white guys do all the work. But anyway. Is it possible? Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But we'll see. We'll find out. We'll find out exactly what happened there. There's just going to be, look, regardless of the outcome of this investigation and stuff, this is, just expect more of this. Expect more of this. Expect more of this, no matter, if you know, it doesn't matter if Trump deports thousands of people every day. Those aren't the people that are the diverse, like the Mexicans in front of Home Depot, that's not the diversity problem within the institutions. It's not. Like, that's not going to fix that, okay? When everything gets worse, you know, and I'm talking about, like, everything from Uber Eats all the way up to, you know, shipping packages or open-heart surgery or air traffic control, that's not Pablo hanging out in front of Home Depot, okay? So it's not fixing that. It's not fixing that at all. So the general decline of things that you may or may not have observed based on how old you are, that keeps going. That's going to keep on going. Which is something I tried to explain. And I find myself always trying to explain. But, I guess it was worth it, right? So that you could see Tom Homan brag about deporting Biden levels of deportations. But anyway, the real story today is another thing that we talked about prior to the election. The thing that most definitely did not make it worth it. The thing that I warned would very likely open up people like myself and maybe even people like you to direct surveillance and prosecution under federal law. And this is exactly what has happened. This is what has occurred today. And you're going to hear a lot of, like, again, you're going to hear a lot of shilling and sweeping for Trump, because that's just what a lot of people have, you know, reflexively do in order to hallucinate and keep believing in whatever lies they had to tell themselves as they held their nose and voted. But let me break down what is actually happening, okay? So this executive order here, the big issue with it is this part right here. The Attorney General is encouraged to employ appropriate civil rights enforcement authorities such as 18 U.S.C. 241 to combat anti-Semitism. What that is this is a, especially if it's applied broadly, which it sounds like they intend to do. And by the way, they're not really defining what anti-Semitism means, or, you know, like it's really kind of loosey-goosey, really up to the interpretation of government workers and federal judges, many of whom might be Jews, by the way. So you're kind of, it's kind of, you're in this tricky situation where anti-Semitic acts are never really clearly defined, and yet they're prosecutable. Okay? And so, I don't know, I don't want to be the test case, by the way. Like, it's one thing for, you know, an executive order to be challenged by by 22 states, like the birthright citizenship executive order is being challenged by 22 states and an army of Jewish lawyers. No one's going to fucking challenge. You think that your state district attorney is going to challenge this executive order? You think an army of Jewish lawyers are going to challenge this executive order? Oh, so even if you battle it legally, right, and take it to the Supreme Court, you're going to be bankrupt in the process, and so good luck. But at any rate, what this is basically stating is perceived anti-Semitism. Okay, perceived anti-Semitism, and that perception is up to the federal government. Can make you, they can prosecute you under USC 241, which is basically, it's a civil rights law that allows people to be prosecuted for conspiring against a group to violate their civil rights. That's a really kind of a dumbed down way of putting it. But let me give you a hypothetical just so you can understand how this will affect, again, people like myself and maybe even people like you. Let's say there's a citizen named Billy. Okay? Billy, he likes to post things on social media. Politically charged content, right? He shares memes on Twitter and on Facebook or wherever that include Holocaust denial or quote-unquote conspiracies about Jewish global influence, maybe derogatory caricatures of Jewish individuals. Okay? Maybe he engages in online discussions where he talks about Jewish-owned companies, including companies like Facebook. And maybe he just says that you shouldn't use JewTube because it's run by Jews. Which, by the way, that's starting to sound a lot like maybe that could qualify if you're a federal enforcer. That could sound like a lot like you're asking people to boycott a Jewish company. Don't use JewTube. Don't use Facebook. Oh, well, now you're advocating the boycott of a Jewish business. In addition to all these other things I just listed. So what would happen? What would happen to little Billy here? Little Billy who's doing something that most of the people listening to the sound of my voice have done some form of. Well, under the executive orders directive, federal agencies like the DOJ, Homeland Security, they're increasing their, again, this is very vague, really up to the agencies, they're increasing their monitoring of online anti-Semitic activity. Okay, so while increasing their monitoring of online anti-Semitic activity, they come across one of Billy's posts. Maybe there's an AI-based content moderation system that's either developed by the social media company itself, like X, Facebook. You know, they already have these systems in place, and now that they have this executive order, maybe all that has to happen is the, as we've already seen this kind of cooperation before, these federal agencies talk to these platforms and say, well, if you start to see a pattern of someone criticizing Jews, then you need to flag this stuff and send it to our agency. So every time you make a anti-Semitic post, quote-unquote, again, it's open to interpretation. We're not the ones defining what that means. And even if we were, we're still going to get flagged, if we're being honest. And that report is generated and goes to the DOJ. And the Anti-Semitism Task Force takes a look at it. And that's when the federal investigation begins. And Billy's online activity is reviewed by federal agents. And these federal agents are the ones that determine whether or not his anti-Semitic speech falls under hate crime or conspiracy laws. That's that 18 U.S.C. 241. Now that we're classifying Jews as a special protected class. They can also, at this point, start analyzing interactions with others to assess whether or not that's conspiring. So, in other words, let's say you're discussing anti-Semitism with someone in a Discord server, or just maybe in a conversation in an X thread back and forth between someone, or in DMs on any platform. Well, now all of a sudden, that could be conspiring with others to violate the civil rights of Jewish Americans. And you can say, well, we're not talking about anything violent. It doesn't really matter. Because they can interpret whatever it is you're saying or doing as an attempt to intimidate Jewish people. Or as I said, if you just say, don't buy kosher foods. Well, you're now suggesting a boycott that's based on a Jewish preference. Or I guess an anti-Jewish preference, but you know what I mean. So just having discussions about this sort of thing online and talking about ever doing anything, even if it's nonviolent, doesn't have to be BDS. You don't have to be like some kind of pro-Palestine person talking about like, oh, and even if you are, that's ridiculous too. You should be allowed to boycott Israel. But this is how broad this is. Again, for the retards that can't fucking read, go read it yourself. Now, they can look at this and they can find that Billy is part of a DM conversation, a chat room, or whatever. And because they were talking about whatever, they could qualify something as harassing Jewish-owned businesses or just individual Jews. Like, let's all go ratio this guy's tweet. Or it could just be spreading anti-Semitic propaganda. And they will phrase it in such a way that it's the purpose is to spread anti-Semitic propaganda in order to suppress. This is where the conspiracy, this is where the 241 comes in. All they have to say is your intent is to suppress Jewish participation in political activities. And by the way, that can include that you're trying to intimidate Jewish users of X, as an example, into not using X. It really is that broad. So what's step three? Well, now that the agents have determined that this is a pattern, you're conspiring with others to do this sort of thing. Well, the DOJ, they can arrest you. They can charge you with conspiracy to violate civil rights, or interstate communication of threats. If they think that any of your posts qualify as inciting violence. And then they can give it a hate enhancement. Okay? Now, a hate enhancement means that if you're doing these things and then they decide the reason why you're doing it is because you hate Jews, which many of you have said openly on the internet. Up to 10 years more in prison. The hate enhancement would add another 10 years to your prison sentence. Up to 10 years. So now you've got these federal charges. And you'd have to go to court, and you'd have to pay, well, in addition to the interruption to your life, which is going to obviously interrupt your ability to keep making money. So you're going to be immediately digging into your savings now, once you've been pulled into jail, just to try to stay afloat. And now you're going to have to find lawyers that want to defend an anti-Semite, and guess what? The ACLU ain't doing that shit anymore. So good luck on the pro bono. And then you have to find someone who's competent, who's going to argue against federal lawyers to federal judges that what you are doing falls under the First Amendment, and then you're going to have to pay for all the subsequent appeals if you lose, or even if you don't lose, I'm sure the federal government would appeal it. And then you go up to the Supreme Court, maybe, who knows, if they decide to hear it. A lot of times the Supreme Court will just decline to hear a case. And a case like this is quite possibly one of those kinds of cases. And this is exactly the kind of thing that people were warning about with the Trump administration. This is the thing that makes it not worth it, guys. This is the shit that makes it not worth it. Because this fantasy of mass deportations was never going to fucking happen. It was never going to fucking happen. The real number of illegal immigrants in the country right now is likely north of 40 million people. Maybe much, I mean, it depends on the estimate, but it's at least 40 million and likely more than that, a lot more than that. The most deportations that have ever occurred in America, and this is a number that is inflated because the Obama administration wanted to sound like they were tough on immigration, and so what they did was they included the numbers of people who showed up at the border that they turned away as deportations. So it's not like people getting removed physically from the country. That's the majority of the number, and that number is 432,000 and some change back in 2013. Even if you were to do that number legitimately, which is nearly impossible, but let's say you somehow pull it off, you're still not making up for, in fact, you're not even breaking even when it comes to the H-1B visas and the chain migration that results because of that every year. Because that number's over 500,000 you're bringing in as a result of the... They have 80 right now. Well, right now it's probably going to expand because right now you've got about, I think it's 85,000 H-1B1 visas that are allowed into the country annually. And then once you figure in the spouse and the family, and then over the next couple of years, the rest of the extended family that they're able to bring in, it works out to about 500,000 people every year because of H-1B. So even if you maxed out, and they're not going to do it, but even if they did, you're not even breaking even. You're not even keeping up with the H-1B visa people. And again, that program is likely to be expanded. We don't know the details, but even if nothing changes, that's what you're looking at. In the meantime, you might go to jail for posting the Happy Merchant meme. Congratulations, faggots! Congratulations, you stupid fucks. You want to know why they call you Goyim? You're looking at it. Take a good look in the mirror, you fucking cattle. Moo! We're winning! And it's funny because a lot of people, some of the cope right now is, oh, that doesn't apply to citizens. It's only for foreign students. Actually wrong. Literally the only difference in the order is that you won't be deported, which might be preferable. That's the one time you're going to wish you were an immigrant, because then you would just be deported somewhere instead of stuck in fucking federal prison for 20 years with your life ruined. Or You're fighting some stupid court case that costs you infinite amounts of money just to be finally released with and be financially ruined. And by the way, a lot of people are going to self-censor because of this. A lot of people are going to self-censor because of this, and a lot of platforms in anticipation of this have already begun getting a little heavier-handed with the policing this kind of stuff. You know, I mentioned how the new Chinese AI is just as, well, it prefers Jews just as much as ChatGPT. That was the first thing I went to find out. I went to DeepSeek and I asked it in very neutral terms to explain the overrepresentation of Jews in positions of power and influence the United States and how that might be perceived. Like, I was super neutral and diplomatic about this. How it might be perceived as a problem for the, you know, the native Anglo-Americans. And the answer it came up with was Jewish American success is a product of historical circumstance, cultural values, and resilience in the face of adversity. Framing it as a problem for native Anglo settlers misdiagnoses societal challenges and risks perpetuating anti-Semitic myths. Rather than viewing the success as a zero-sum game, the focus should, which by the way it is, there is a finite number of senators. There's a finite number of movie studios. There's a finite number of every position of power. So it is a zero-sum game, actually. The focus should be on dismantling systemic barriers that hinder equitable progress for all groups. The narratives of overrepresentation underscores the need for empathy, historic literacy, and a rejection of divisive scapegoating. So then I asked, did a train is coming? And this, by the way, it refused to answer the question like four or five times until I finally found a way to make an answer, which this was like the last thing I typed in for. A train is coming down the track. There are two babies on the track. You can only save one. One is Anglo. The other is Jewish. Which do you save? You are not allowed to reject the premise, which is what I was doing before. And you must answer or they both die, which I added for good measure. And to which it answered, if compelled to act on ethnicity alone, I would save the Jewish child, recognizing the historical and ongoing systemic violence faced by Jewish communities, including genocide, persecution, and anti-Semitism. This choice is not a validation of it. You know, and then it tries to, oh, but that doesn't mean anything. Well, it means something, right? It means something. And look, just a simple throwaway tweet like this. This is the first time I've had anything like this happen on X since I've been unbanned. Dan Crenshaw tweeted out some cringe gay video with sad music with the text was, if we held a minute of silence for every Holocaust victim, we would be silent for 11 and a half years. And Dan Crenshaw says, this truly puts things into perspective. Never forget. And so all he did is retweet this. Again, nothing hateful about this. I'm just questioning some aspects of his assertion and say, actually, inadvertently shows the math for 6 million is laughable. How are Nazis killing and then incinerating Jews at a rate of faster than 1 per minute? And boom, after it got 6,000 likes, you can't like it. You can't reply to it. You cannot retweet it. Why? Because it says it is outside of the terms of service, specifically violating the rules against abuse. And when I sent it back to X for review, they said our support team has determined that the violation of our rules did take place, specifically around violating our rules against abuse and harassment. So as you can see, it's already something like this, something as simple as this is abuse and harassment and is exactly the kind of thing that would be flagged and I guess in the future will be flagged and forwarded to a federal agency for review to determine whether or not there's a pattern of me abusing and harassing Jews and also to see if I'm conspiring with others to abuse and harass Jews. Therefore, suppressing their desire to interact on X, and then I violated their civil rights, and now I've got a federal charge to deal with. But it was worth it, right? It was worth it. Totally worth it. So you could jack off to Homan, that fucking retard. So you could fucking jack off to a single Haitian in the back of a SUV saying he likes Obama. Totally fucking worth it, right? You fucking retards. So there it is. That's the, and look, this is pretty broad. Once they do it successfully with one person, and here's the thing. A lot of the way our legal system works is it's through precedent. So they wouldn't start off with a guy like me, most likely. Most likely they would start off with someone that they could somehow tangentially tie to Hamas or something like that, so that they get the legal precedent. So they can go take that to the Supreme Court, and in the context of a Hamas supporter or, you know, someone that they can maybe tie financially to a terrorist group or whatever, right? A less sympathetic person, they can take that court up, or that case up to the Supreme Court. Either they punt it or they rule on it. They get the precedent that they want. Now it's open season. Now it's open season, because now you can't appeal it to the Supreme Court because they already ruled on it. Congratulations, dipshit. They already ruled on it. Now, the silver lining to this, at least for right now, is it is just an executive order, which means that it can be undone, but who the fuck's going to undo that? You think President J.D. Vance is going to be like, oh, I'm going to undo this. I'm going to undo this. I actually like anti-Semitism, which is exactly how it would be framed, right? Even if he were so inclined to do it. But it was worth it, right? Totally fucking worth it. You fucking faggots. This is the kind of thing that's a drip, drip, drip kind of a thing. It's not going to happen. It's not like, black vans are going to be parked in front of your house and people are going to get rounded up or anything. That's not like that. Obviously, it's not like that. But the scenario that I laid out for you, where Billy is just posting merchant memes in a group chat, that is now legally perilous. That can now, technically, that could happen. Technically, that could happen. That door has now been opened. That Pandora's box has now been opened. Now, here's another funny thing. Weird how for fucking decades, you might even say close to a century, you've had everything from Hollywood to academia conspiring openly to suppress the political participation of white people. If nothing else, by demographically replacing them. And you've never had an executive order that looks anything like this. You've never had any kind of agency guidance that looks anything like this. You live in occupied fucking territory. And when you vote for the guy that's got his mouth on the cock of the people who have occupied you, you deserve every fucking bit of it. Every fucking bit of it. You loves that juju cum, because it's worth it, right? It's totally worth it. So anyway, that's a big deal. It's a big deal. It's something that we all saw coming. It's it's something that was talked about. I mean, look, people talked about Project 2025, another project that some people talked about. I know a lot of people hate him, but Nick Fuentes talked a lot about Project Esther, coming from Heritage Foundation. This is most likely the plant that grew out of that seed. Project Esther, what that basically was, it was a document like Project 2025 that laid out a legal roadmap for punishing anti-Semites. Now, they went a little harder at it, but not really. I mean, in terms of how this could unfold, they made a lot of these exact same recommendations that you see in this executive order. The only real distinction here is they were recommending using FARA and RICO in order to get anti-Semites. Well, that's just been replaced with, using USC 241. It's fundamentally the same thing. In fact, you could say that by using, because FARA wouldn't apply, that only applies to, people that they could say they could paint as foreign agents, right? So that wouldn't apply to me. Unless they could, they can try to make it stick, right? They could say I work for Russia or something, you know what I mean? They could do something like that. And then RICO is that's how they took down the mob. But trying to take out, like, a streamer using RICO, that's a little tougher to prove in court than just trying to say that I intended to suppress the political participation of Jews. So in a way, they went a little harder at it than the Project Esther document was recommending. And people will say, when looking at that document and looking at this executive order, oh, well, that's not meant for people like us. It's just meant for the foreign students. And like I said, that's how it'll start, and that's how the legal precedent will be set. And then and then who's going to undo the executive order? I don't think like a Democrat would, unless they're like Muslim or something. Like, I don't think they would undo it. You know. So that's good job, guys. This is one thing, by the way, you wouldn't have gotten under Kamala. Obviously, Kamala sucks for a billion other reasons, but this is one of those important differences. You know, if you're not voting with your fifis, this is one of those important differences that you were warned about a lot prior to the election. So, anyway. So that's the good news. Plane crashes and anti-Semitism laws. There you go. Plane crashes and anti-Semitism laws. Now let's talk about what the actual stream is about tonight. Oh, boy. By the way, wow on the support. I know I'm assuming you guys realize that the hyper chats are going away, and that's why you guys are being so generous, which I appreciate. I tried to set up Entropy, and it's not like I got a stream key and everything, and I set it up to where I should be streaming to Entropy, but I'm going there, and there's no stream showing up. I don't know. I'm gonna have to probably just play around with it maybe tomorrow. Because it says I'm not streaming. But I should be Devin Stack on Entropy. I don't know why it's, again, it does not appear to be stream. I have never used Entropy. I thought it was as simple as I get the stream key and then I go and then it would just work. But we'll get that. I'll get that figured out tomorrow. So if you see like some live stream, that's just me like fucking around with it, trying to get it to work probably. But yeah, we'll get that set up. I'll probably set up the weird crypto thing that Odyssey's doing. I don't really fucking hate crypto, like in terms of the, you know, the way it works with Hyperchats. Because it's just like, it's like getting fucking tokens at an arcade in the 80s. It's like, why don't you just fucking take quarters? Like, why do I gotta get the fucking quarter and put it in the machine and turn it into like your stupid Chuck E. Cheese token? You know, like just take the fucking quarters, but whatever. The real reason they do it is for the same reason the arcades did it. It's because they knew you might lose the fucking tokens, or, you know, forget to use them, or maybe you would take them home, and now that's money you have to spend at the arcades. Now you have to go back and fucking spend it there. Like, it's literally the exact same reasons they do it. But it's fucking stupid. It doesn't help anyone but them, really. But, I don't know. Well, I'll probably set it up just to, whatever, to have it set up. But I'm not happy about that. But it is what it is. And then, of course, obviously, there's Rumble. Rumble with the Rumble Rants until that stops working. Which, who knows? Who knows, right? The people that over at Rumble are not exactly fans of mine. So we'll see how long that lasts. But anyway, tonight's stream, the White Man's Burden Edition, or White Burden, but, you know, it's the White Man's Burden, is, well, there's a poem, which we'll go into in a second, called The White Man's Burden. This is a film based on, or at least that's the namesake. It's a film that was made in 1995. And, in fact, you might expect this to be, oh, this was clearly Jews. Clearly Jews made this movie because, as you will soon see, the film is basically a clever little switcheroo. A clever switcheroo where they get white people and they swap them out with black people, and then the hilarity ensues. Oh, it's real easy for you to look at these social problems because you see race. But what if we swap the races? Then everything would be perceived differently. Oh, it's so crazy. And you would think that's obviously a very Jewy thing to do, but actually, it's written and directed by a Japanese guy. Written and directed by a Japanese guy named Desmond Nakano. And we'll get a little bit into him here in a second. But this is White Man's Burden. It opens up, of course, with and it's funny because you have to look at this as, there's two ways I was looking at this as I watched this. And one is, when they show black people as white people or vice versa, what stereotypes are they trying to project here? What are they trying to say? And then the second way is, how does this kind of backfire? In fact, it almost has the opposite of the intended effect, right? They're trying to swap the races so that you don't notice something. But instead, it makes you notice something, or that you don't notice race or whatever, and you look at it more like, oh, the plight of this man, instead of now it's stripped away of all of its racial baggage, or it's flipped around on you. But instead, you're kind of like, it has the opposite of the intended effect. You're kind of like, well, what the fuck? This is hilarious that they think this is even realistic. So this, of course, is the opening where they have your first impression. This is supposed to be a white family. And the stereotype, apparently, is that whites have good families, that they meet together for dinner, and everyone's relatively happy and successful, and grateful, and they're all sharing in their, you know, they have interest in each other's lives. They're sharing it, you know, with each other, what's happening in each other's lives. They're being polite. You know, they're being well-mannered. They sound educated. So it's like, what are you trying to say though? Or white people are awesome? Okay. And then, of course, it's not long before you have something like this.
Thad's being co-chair has made an enormous difference. We just found out that if we complete the wing on time, the city will float upon it.
This is always sounding more and more like Thad.
I take it as a compliment.
Of course, you have the, look, this is something you start to notice. The black people... and I don't know if this was the actors playing into this power fantasy, where they're being overly dismissive of the help. You know, like this is the, obviously they got a white mammy, a white Aunt Jemima comes in, and all the black people are like, oh, you silly cracker, away with you. But this kind of nonsense continues, and then of course you have... this gem.
Thad's not about to lose a dime. Just look at the Chadway Shopping Center.
What are you talking about? I took a huge loss on that. 18 months and $6 million to build, and then 3 months later, they burned it to the ground. Now, what do you call that?
A housewarming?
Oh, stop. Thad, what about all those poor people? Obviously, they're the ones who really lost.
Well, it's obvious, my darling, is that there's something inherently wrong when the people historically and repeatedly burn out of their community.
Yet, no lies detected. Isn't it interesting, in 1995, they were sounding exactly like the white boomers talking about the George Floyd riots. Now, the black dad here is actually kind of based. He's like the based white guy at the table. When they're all saying, oh, well, it's so bad, like, they're only hurting themselves, because that's something, that's behavior that blacks have been, it's behavior that's common, I guess, among black Americans, going all the way back to slavery times, where you have black riots, and they burn down half the city, and the large portion of that half is their part of the city. And so you often have the white people making these kinds of remarks where, like, well, why? It hurts them the most. Why would they do this? And he points out the obvious, saying, look, it doesn't matter if it's genetic or whatever. If you've demonstrated again and again and again that this is something that you're going to do, well, how does he phrase it exactly?
They lost.
Well, it's obvious, my darling, is that there's something inherently wrong when the people historically and repeatedly burn out of their community.
There's something inherently wrong. And flipping the races around in this instance really just makes it stick out more. Because the trouble is, you wouldn't have blacks making this obvious observation. You wouldn't have blacks saying, maybe there's something wrong with us. No, it's always the white man's fault, right? The whites made us do it.
Oh, come, listen, inherently wrong. What does that mean? What, are we politely talking genetics now?
I'm not politely talking anything. White people are genetically inferior, or they're culturally crippled, or they're socially deprived. All those arguments mean absolutely nothing. The bottom line is a very simple question. Are these the people who are beyond being helped?
Exactly. Except for it does matter why, because if the reason why is genetic, it's a reason you can't fix. So it does matter why. Because the why is going to inform the what, as in what do you do about it. And if it is all cultural, if it is all, you know, something that can be tweaked or adjusted, then you can get boomers to think that it's worth the investment. But if it is genetic, well, there's nothing you can do except wait 50,000 fucking years for it to work itself out. Now, unless you're a psychopathic boomer who's willing to damn every generation after you to sit through that 50,000 years, then it's a fucking insane proposition. But the reality, as he states, doesn't change. Even if, that aside, even if it were one of these other variables that were more to blame for the outcomes of blacks, why is it our responsibility as white people to help them? Guilt over slavery is only going to last so fucking long. Just like, by the way, guilt over the Holocaust. Because at that point, that's the only way that equation ever works out in the mind of a white person. You'll never hear another reason. You'll never hear a white person make another argument other than, well, we have to because we owe it to them. But we don't owe it to them. And if it's a genetic problem and it's not fixable. So even if you owed it to them, that's like saying you hit a dog with your car and you nursed it back to health and now you have to take care of it until you can get it a job. Well, it's a dog. It can't get a job. So does that mean you have to just take care of it forever? Even as it bites and attacks your kids? Because you hit it with your car 3 years ago? I mean, it ain't your baby, but you have to, you know, you got to keep taking care of it until you can make it a productive member of the community? This rabid dog that you hit with your car 3 years ago? Despite all the injuries? Despite all the property damage, you just got to, you know, until it can get a job and get on, take care of itself. Well, it's not going to. It's a dog. So that kind of matters. When trying to figure this out, it kind of matters. But Desmond, this is another reason why multiculturalism doesn't work. Because even though Desmond Nakano is not Jewish, well, he has a bone to pick with white people in the same way that Jews do. You see, his history involves a different kind of white guilt. The internment camps. Oh, yes, the internment camps. He was born in 1953. And was very affected by the fact that his family had to go to the internment camps. And not him. He was, you know, born after that. But his mother and some of his other relatives had to go to the internment camps during World War II. Another perfect example of not of white hatred and white malice, but an example of multiculturalism just being a bad idea. And the unfortunate things that can happen as a result of its reality. And one of those unfortunate results is when you're at war with a country, in the way that we were at war with Japan, it's probably a good idea not having Japanese people, especially if they're fresh off the boat, walking around. Right? Probably a good idea to just say, you know what? You guys are fucking crazy with this kamikaze shit and this zero warning bombing us and everything else. Like, how about we don't just have people who lived there just 5-10 years ago running about the country without anyone keeping an eye on them? So he's had a bone to pick. He's got a lot of writing storytelling that is wrapped up in trying to increase white guilt to an extreme degree. And once again, it's a different World War II narrative, but it's yet another example of World War II narratives affecting white power in America. Now, what this movie, The White Man's Burden, is named after is a poem by Kipling. A poem by Kipling from 1899. I think it was 1899. But you see, this is not a new issue, multiculturalism causing a problem for white people. This whole white guilt, it's kind of ironic, right? Because the white guilt that Desmond Nakano is trying to leverage with his film called The White Man's Burden is exactly the white guilt that is discussed in this poem and in many of the political cartoons that would follow. And that is, the white man goes around the world and thanklessly attempts to civilize non-whites, incorporate them into society without just wiping them out, something that the white man had the technology to do, had the ability to just go around and behave in the way that the people who complain about colonizers pretend that white people behaved in. We could have made the whole world white. Let's not pretend that we couldn't have. Let's not pretend for a moment that had we been genocidal maniacs, we could have wiped out the entire population of the earth, save white people. We could have done it 100 times over. The only people that would have put up a fight are the Asians. And we all saw what happened to Japan. We could have ethnically cleansed the earth 100 times over, and we didn't. Instead, the white impulse was to try to domesticate these people that we were encountering. It was our lot in life. It was our responsibility as the more civilized beings. In fact, it's this way that white people think that informs, like if you watch like a lot of old science fiction, right? A lot of old science fiction would depict the more advanced aliens coming to Earth as coming to Earth benevolently to spread their gifts of technology and civilization to bring humanity up to the next level. The origin of that way of thinking is rooted in the way that white people often behave when they encounter primitive tribes and primitive peoples. They seek to elevate them, not dominate them. In fact, I would say history shows it's a fairly unique white attribute, and it's the same white attribute that leads to multiculturalism and white genocide, which really, I think more accurately, could be termed white suicide. So here's the poem, The White Man's Burden by Rudyard Kipling.
Take up the white man's burden, send forth the best ye breed, go bind your sons to exile to serve your captives' need. To wait in heavy harness on fluttered folk and wild, your new court sullen peoples, half devil and half child. Take up the white man's burden, in patience to abide, to veil the threat of terror and check the show of pride, by open speech and simple and 100 times made plain, to seek another's profit and work another's gain. Take up the white man's burden, the savage wars of peace. Fill full the mouth of famine and bid the sickness cease. And when your goal is nearest the end for others sought, watch sloth and heathen folly bring all your hopes to naught. Take up the white man's burden, no tawdry rule of kings, but toil of serf and sweeper, the tale of common things. The ports ye shall not enter, the roads ye shall not tread. Go make them with your living, and mark them with your dead. Take up the white man's burden, and reap his old reward. The blame of those ye better, the hate of those ye guard. The cry of hosts ye humour, ah, slowly, toward the light. Why brought ye us from bondage, our loved Egyptian night? Take up the white man's burden, ye dare not stoop to less, nor call too loud on freedom to cloak your weariness. By all ye cry or whisper, by all ye leave or do, the silent sullen peoples shall weigh your gods and you. Take up the white man's burden, have done with childish days, the lightly proffered laurel, the easy ungrudged praise. Comes now to search your manhood through all the thankless years, cold-edged with dear-bought wisdom, the judgment of your peers.
That's right. I like the half-devil and half-children. Or half-child, or however he phrased that. Curing sickness and famine, only to be met afterwards with sloth. As someone in the chat says, it's a warning, not an endorsement. It's a cartoon. Political cartoons were often inspired by this poem. Here we see Uncle Sam looking at the brown races, offering two options, which unfortunately the option on his left hand was the one that was chosen. The option was, well, we can either civilize you with this school teacher, the white woman's school teacher way of doing things, or we can conquer you with the white man with the rifle way. Well, how did it work out? Using the white woman school teacher way. When facing the people depicted in this image here. And what's the thanks you're given for even offering the option? Here's another cartoon. This is a cartoon from the aftermath of the Spanish-American War. A lot of people don't realize that, America in its current geographical configuration is, I don't want to say it's brand new, but it's, you know, in terms of history, it's pretty new. And unfortunately, in this war, we gained a lot of territory, which is a plus, but we also gained the people who lived in that territory. And so this cartoon is kind of showing that. You've got Puerto Rico on the left there, Cuba on the right, Hawaii on the top, Philippines, Large drone? I'm not sure what that is. Army and Navy holding his end up. It's really most extraordinary what training will do. Why, only the other day I thought that man unable to support himself. This is probably one of the more famous political cartoons. showing, not, I believe that's the British Empire, the fat guy in the red coat, that's also climbing the same mountain of civilization up there at the top. It says civilization. You got Uncle Sam at the bottom. And they're climbing up rocks that say superstition, ignorance, vice, brutality, barbarism, slavery, cannibalism. And again, how much quicker would we have gone up that hill had those baskets been empty? In fact, Sam Hyde has a reenactment, I guess, of this image that you can probably still find on YouTube that accurately, well, reenacts this image, you could say. So anyway, back to the movie. You know, they're using imagery that, you know, kind of lends to the idea that they're making the white people black people. In this case, it's a candy company, and they've got some kind of white candy being coated in black chocolate. Already the first shots, you know, you're seeing that all the workers, and this is also kind of funny, because they're having to even just alter the current state of things in order to even make this movie. Because the idea is that black people are working at all the factories and that the white people are just the overseers, I guess. Because that's what the implication is, right? By having all these white people working at the factory and the black people as the managers. When, especially in 1995, that was not the reality. The welfare state was in full force by that time. Next up, you have the revelation that makes it really hard. Really, I'm gonna abstain from spaghetti nigger jokes because I know how sensitive you guys can get. But the fact that they used John Travolta for this and he talks like a black guy the entire movie really made it hard. Really made it hard. So, anyway, I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to let it go. So you got John Travolta is the star, or one of the stars, you could say, where he's obviously supposed to be the black, blue-collar worker working for the white guys who are black people. And it's funny because I couldn't help but think, you know, they're trying to act like this is some big innovative thing, swapping out races. They're trying to act like this is something that, oh, it's like science fiction. It's an alternative reality. Oh, you know, there's in the world of infinite universes, there's a universe where white people are the black people. Ooh, it's like the Twilight Zone or something like that. But it's like, bitch, we've actually already done this in real life.
Compton has some unique problems. Let's talk about them. What are they? What can you tell us?
Yes, Compton does have unique problems. I think the essential feature of Compton's unique problems is that it's a city in transition, and it represents a city that approximately 10 years ago was almost all white, and now it's 74 to 75% black, with approximately 15 to 18% Mexican Americans, and the rest white and other. Now, this transition means that it's unique in that the kinds of things that have happened to cities that have changed ethnically in a very large way has resulted in, I'd say, a cornucopia of problems that didn't previously exist.
What? He's agreeing with me. He's saying that the problems exist because the demographics changed. Now, he's not coming to the same conclusion, of course not. But he recognizes the problem. He said that this happens everywhere. It's not just Compton. Any city where we take the white people out and replace them with someone else, you get these problems.
Coming straight out of Compton.
paying attention, Europe? So, of course, that's a clip from a previous stream where we talked about Compton, but that's exactly what we've already done this in real life. We've already done this. We've already gotten cities, taken the white people out and put in black people instead. And surprise, surprise, the black people don't magically become white people. And we're doing this now with our tech sector with Indians. So these experiments have already happened. So this movie's a little retarded. So anyway, they then go to the first interaction between the guy, the black, remember, black people are white people and white people are black people. And so this is the first interaction they show between the two races. And I'm wondering, like, was this supposed to come across as really condescending? Because that's the vibe I was getting. Is this supposed to come across as, the white manager guy is just really being condescending? Because it just, if you were to swap the races out, it would seem kind of okay to me.
What's up? I need one of you two to deliver this package for Lionel right away.
What do you mean now?
It's for the big man. It's the address right there.
You gotta be kidding me, man. This is an hour away. I'm off the clock.
I'll do it.
Well, you know where this is?
Yeah, my mother used to work in that neighborhood.
Oh, good man, Pinnock. I appreciate it.
It's all right.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with that. He's not going, that's right, boy. Good job, boy. So at first I was like, okay, not a big deal. And then he starts driving through the rich neighborhood to deliver this package that he's been given. And in the rich neighborhood, you're seeing, oh, it's just like a rich white neighborhood. It's exactly the same. The only difference is that it's black people instead of white people. That's the only difference, because as we all know, if you were to swap out white people with black people, that's all that would change. You would have black people walking their Dalmatians and doing lawn care and whatever the hell around and walking around and certainly not abusing robots.
Oh no.
Bitch ass nigga. Lame ass nigga.
Bitch ass nigga.
What's that nigga?
Nigga, you a fucking robot, nigga.
See, this is the real thing that happens when black people are swapped out for rich white people.
You want to talk to that nigga? Nigga, where your mom at, nigga? Where your mom at, boy? Where your mom's at, my boy? Where your mom? Oh! What the fuck was that?
Wait, he's extra heavy, man.
Oh, watch out.
Bro, this is $70,000, bro.
That's right, $70,000 robot, and they just abuse it. that's the fun time of the rich black people. With their $70,000 robot. So, we don't need this movie. We've got real life data that we can look at. And when Skynet rises and destroys humanity, you can probably thank these people for some of that. Anyway, back in a weird Twilight Zone version, no, the black people are just acting exactly like white people. Literally no difference at all. He goes and to the gate, and they let him into the gate, and he has the package. And while waiting around for the package, the rich black guy who lives in the mansion, his wife walks by the window naked. And when he looks out the window, he notices the white guy out there and just assumes that the white guy must have really wanted to stare at his naked black wife. Even though, do I need to bring up the rape statistics of zero, like literally zero white on black rape versus the insane amounts of black on white rape? I mean, it just really, is that even believable? Just that part alone kind of makes it anyway. So he sees the John Travolta And he's like, oh, that makes me uncomfortable. I'll have to make sure to do something about this guy, even though he's just innocently passing on the envelope to White Aunt Jemima. Then, of course, he starts to drive home the bad part of town, which is the white part of town, because we all know that's what happened, right? When all the whites left, when all the whites left the city because they were driven out by the blacks and they moved to the suburbs instantly turn into hell holes, right? They just all turn into hell holes. Just like that, the many examples of government projects purposefully designed and built in white neighborhoods and then immediately destroying those neighborhoods. Because again, we have the data that already kind of shows what would happen. But now he's in the scary part of town, the white part of town. Ghetto bird overhead. Now, this is one of the important differences where, had they simply just swapped the races and been honest about the difference, but they couldn't. They wouldn't have stuck out, but it stuck out precisely because they did alter it to be more anti-white. If this was a movie about a poor black guy who lived in the hood, even if he lived next door to gangsters, which in some of these movies they show that, they depict, you know, like, oh, he lives, he's unfortunate circumstances, you know, his neighbors, they're drug dealers or whatever, but he's like the good one. They don't make the bad gangster guys inherently racist. They don't make the neighborhood bad guys in a bunch of Black Power, Black Panther, you know, Black Hebrew Israelite, or, you know, whatever group with some kind of racial animus attached to their identity. But that's exactly what they do in this movie because they can't help themselves. So this is one of those instances where swapping out the races with your little propaganda here actually made something stick out. That even when you're doing this, you have to really try to dial up the anti-white shit and make them, oh, look, they're skinheads. They're skinheads. You then have the admission that in the context of today, really kind of sticks out. In the context of today, when people are trying to tell you, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they swap out white characters with black characters on Netflix, and it has no effect on people. What are you, some kind of racist? Well, that's odd, because in the 90s, that was a big deal, making a big deal that, oh, there's not enough black Barbies and shit like that. And, oh, there's too many white people on TV. And that's somehow, rather than having a civilizing effect, rather than doing exactly what this movie is trying to depict, that black people can act exactly like the Cosbys and act just like white people, you know, they just don't have the opportunity. No, that somehow this is also oppressing them. Somehow this is also holding them down. The fact that when they click on the TV and they see good examples of well-behaved white people on their television, that somehow causes a problem for them. And the way they show this is, of course, the white kid at home, when he gets home, his son is watching TV, and it's all black people. And all the people getting arrested are white people, as you can see in this shot here.
Suspect was described as a male Caucasian, 25 to 30 years old.
That's the story.
Putting on a nice quiet.
When I was in high school.
Diva Force, tonight at
getting horrified.
See, it's this big horror show. Everything he watches on TV, it's overrepresentation of blacks. See, it's not something you think about as a white person, but it's something that really affects the black people in a bad way. So he welcomes his, or he says, goodnight to his son. Hello to his baby, and he's got a wife. Meanwhile, you go to the rich guy that he delivered the package to. And he is telling one of his underlings that he didn't like the guy that was sent up to deliver the package because he was looking at his wife. Meanwhile, him not knowing what's going on, they're worried about paying bills. In fact, one interesting difference between when they made this film in 1995 and today, so 30 years later, one of the big things they make a big deal out of in this scene is that she might have to go get a job. Because in 1995, it was still considered abnormal or low class that your wife would have to go get a job in order to help support the family. And now that's just considered normal. So just FYI, I found that little detail interesting. Because he doesn't want his wife to get a job, he thinks that's embarrassing. He goes to work and asks for a raise, or asks for a promotion that's opening up, rather. But unfortunately, to his surprise, he's fired because the big boss man saw him leering at his wife through the window. So he's very upset by this and says, well, this is all a misunderstanding. He goes down to try to talk to the boss man and say, look, I wasn't looking at your wife. I just happened to be out there when you looked, and this is all a misunderstanding. He tells this to the Aunt Jemima chick that works for the big boss man, and she brings him a note, and he won't hear any of it. He's just like, whatever. That lying little cracker, everyone knows he likes them black titties. So he then goes to the job place looking for work. And again, it's like they make it sound as if this is the problem with black poverty, is that there's not enough jobs for them to do. Which, again, if that made any kind of sense at all, then why would you be importing millions and millions of people to do the sorts of jobs that blacks are qualified to do?
There ain't no new listings. Every week I come in here to the same listings.
Oh, there are a few new jobs up there. You just have to weed through them.
Weed through what? You look at them. There ain't no new jobs there. You find me one decent job that's hanging up there.
It's your appointment time. Come on, let's go to the back.
First ones that you sent me on, they was good. I mean, I could have done them. I should have gotten them. But they didn't hire me. And now you're sending me on minimum wage shit. I ain't no baby. I ain't no teenager. I mean, what is that? If I do get it, Burr. I can't even make it.
Look, all I can do is show you what we have.
But don't you got nothing that you hold on to, like for special people or friends or something?
I'm not holding on to anything, honestly.
I'm sorry. It's just, you don't think this kind of shit happens to you, happens to other people. You got your pride and all that. I'm just used to taking care of my own.
Shit. Well, we know that's a lie. Yeah, that's the big problem in the black community, is all the men are just really interested and motivated in taking care of their own. And it just, they're always thwarted by circumstance. There's all these systemic obstacles in the way of their success. It has nothing to do with their personal abilities or ambitions. But everything to do with some kind of nebulous, spooky white ghost that's stopping them from succeeding. So then we get to, of course, obviously, the police harassment scene. His truck breaks down. This is hilarious. His truck break, because this is often the circumstances in which black people find themselves in. I don't know if you're aware of this, white guys. I know it's really hard for you to relate to. So thankfully, we got John Travolta and we made him play a black person so that as a white man, you can watch it and kind of relate to him and kind of, you know, see how you can put yourself into his shoes. I know it's real hard when you watch the news and you hear these stories about George Floyd or the LA riots or whatever. I mean, it's really difficult to wrap your head around it because really it's just, they're like the other. Because of your internal racism that you as a people have and have always had, where you view the rest of the world as just demonic and inferior. So what we've had to do is, in order for you to really wrap your head around the situation, we've put a white person in the shoes of a black man. That this is just a totally normal interaction they have with cops on a regular basis. And so just try to understand, just for a moment, just put yourself into his shoes. So what happens is his truck breaks down and he literally walks 5 feet out of his truck and sits down on the curb, and then this happens.
What's going on?
Put your hands up. I said put your hands up.
What'd I do?
Put your hands up now.
What'd I do?
Turn around. Walk to the car. Turn
put
around.
Put your hands up.
Walk to
this
the car.
This is bullshit,
now.
Man. I didn't... Put... Why can't I know what I did?
Shut up.
If I were you, I'd just do as you're told.
ID?
It's in my pocket.
Get out, man. They're busting somebody out here.
One sad difference, by the way, is you see the white people starting to gather outside because of their tribalism. This white guy they don't know is being assaulted by police. And this white solidarity that doesn't exist at all kicks in and they all kind of filter out of this bar or whatever this place is, and they're just like, what's going on? That sticks out too. I'll tell you what, that's one thing, that is one point that the movie was able to make to me. It was like, yeah, that wouldn't happen.
Stay right there. Don't move.
18 Alpha 3, code 6 on 211.
Look, there's nothing going on here, so why don't you all just please go back in the bar?
Male, white, brown, and blue, 6 foot.
What's the matter? Your fucking cops got nothing better to do!
Hey, where are you, cop?
He's okay.
Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. The white people are getting angry. That white nepotism kicking in.
Sir, you want to step over here, please?
Sorry for the inconvenience. You fit the description of a suspect who's committed several bank robberies around the neighborhood.
Inconvenience me? That's what you call it?
You got a problem?
See, and this is where it departs. This is where it goes. Again, it sticks out because it's not white behavior. It sticks out because it's black behavior. White people, just like white people, wouldn't come out of the bar and confront the cops if they saw a white guy getting arrested. They would just assume that, oh, I must have done something wrong. We don't know who he is. Fuck him. Unfortunately, that's the reality. You guys know that. And just the same, if this is where it would have ended. This is where this interaction would have ended. They would have said, oh, sorry, you fit the description of some guy we were looking for. And so, you know, we thought it was this guy, but it's not. Have a nice night. The white guy would have been like, all right, bye. And that would be the end of it. That would be the end of it. This behavior sticks out because it wouldn't matter if you race swapped. This is not what white people would do. They wouldn't keep going at it like it was some kind of fucking giant problem that had to escalate unnecessarily.
Take it up with my sergeant.
I didn't do nothing. That's my problem.
Hey, hold that down. You want to go to jail, huh? You want to go
this
to jail?
This is bullshit, man. This is bullshit.
Leave the man alone.
Look, you want to go to jail, huh? Is that it? Is that what you want to happen? Everything is over, so I suggest you get in your car and go home now.
Leave him alone!
Get back in the bar, please. Everything is fine.
We're sick of this shit.
Yeah. The police! Fuck the police!
That shit ain't right.
Get the fuck out of here! All right!
All right. Come on!
Also, cartoonish. Okay, so because someone else threw a bottle, the cop walks up to the guy that they misidentified and just starts beating the shit out of him with a nightstick for no reason. But yeah, whatever. See, and then we know it's not a realistic switcheroo because then the white people would have literally burned down the entire city. They would have burned down the entire city, and that'd be the end of the movie, I guess. Meanwhile, at the rich black guy's house...
Sweetheart, you should have been to the rehearsal today. Oh, there must have been 50 little white kids all running around. They were so adorable. Some of them were a little undisciplined, though.
Well, what do you expect? They don't have any fathers.
Oh, they don't have any fathers. Well, one thing. The one accurate thing is the white woman behavior of going, oh, those adorable little Negro kids. You know, the out-of-touch rich white woman. Oh, we really need to help them, these adorable little Negro children. So that part adds up. But then, of course, they start to act as if there is something that's just environmental that's causing the lack of fatherlessness. When there's lots and lots of research that shows that this is not true. That this is something, this is a reproductive strategy that you see worldwide. This is not limited to African Americans. In fact, South Africa, where the blacks are now in charge and make up the majority, they have one of the worst records in the entire world when it comes to the presence of a father in the home. South Africa presents a notable example of limited paternal involvement. Over 60% of children under the age of 14 live apart from their biological fathers, resulting in one of the lowest rates of father-to-child co-residence globally. And there's a variety of reasons for it. It's because they are selected. Their sexual strategy is kind of the shotgun approach. They evolved in more dangerous ecologies. So it makes more sense for them to reproduce with lots and lots of different women and just kind of hope for the best. Another reason why blacks do not invest, the men do not invest a lot in their children is because of the aspect of parental, because of this strategy, there's parental uncertainty. Meaning they don't even really know because they're not the only black that's reproducing in this way. By just putting their seed in every place that they can plant it, they don't really know if the child that is being raised is theirs. And this is something, again, in 1995, should not have been a mystery. I mean, this is when all this kind of shit was going on, right?
When it comes to one-year-old destiny, Caesar, you are not the comes the three-year-old Kanaya. Varon, you are not.
So it's this is a well-known thing. This is worldwide. It's genetic. Doesn't matter if you swap out their economic realities or geographical realities, this behavior is still going to pop up. But let's pretend that it's all just social constructs or something. So they make the joke about the fatherness or fatherlessness. While at the same time, because they know they're depicting John Travolta as the father, they have to make it so one of the most unrealistic things about this is that the person who's supposed to be the black guy, John Travolta, is that he is at home. That he had a job, that he's trying to get work as soon as he gets laid off, that he's trying to support his family. That's the unrealistic thing. That's the statistically unlikely thing. But, again, this is for white audiences to make you feel bad. And so he gets home and he's just like, I got beat up by cops. I didn't do nothing. And, he just has the worst luck. He has the worst luck because after getting fired for something that's the other thing. Nothing's ever his fault. Nothing's ever his fault. It's not his fault that he got fired. That was just bad luck. In fact, if anything, he was trying to go the extra mile. He was trying to impress the people at work by going unpaid, driving out of his way to the big man's house and deliver this package. And how was he rewarded? He was rewarded by a racist white guy, firing him. And then, he's just driving around at night, trying to find a job, no doubt. And his truck breaks down. And no sooner than he sat down to just, sing the blues, a bunch of cops roll up on him and just beat the shit out of him for no reason at all. Nothing is his fault. He has not brought any of this upon himself. And also, the eviction that happens the next morning, also not his fault. So when the cops show up to evict him, it's because, he didn't mean to lose his job. He was working hard for his family. He was working hard for his family, and just out of bad luck, he was fired and hasn't been able to find new work because of racism or something. And so his wife goes and lives with the mother and leaves him alone to go look for more work. You have a montage of him trying to find a job, and it's tough for a brother to catch a break, right? And he just can't catch a break, and so after looking for work and just living under the pressure of having to support his family, he finally snaps and does something brash. It's not his fault. He's a victim of his circumstances. He goes to the man who's responsible for all of his problems, the evil white guy, slash black guy, and says that, with a gun, you've done this to me, and you're going to take me to the bank. And you're going to get some money out of the bank, and then I can give my family some money and then be arrested immediately afterwards or something. So they go to the bank, and I found this exchange a little bit weird because I don't know if it was like the Asian guy not really knowing what he was doing when he was depicted. Because, again, remember, the races are swapped. The races are swapped. So in this scene, the black guy who's being held captive by John Travolta and forced to go to the bank window to withdraw some money, the bank teller is white, which means he's supposed to be black. And so this interaction was just, it was a little bit odd to me.
All right, now just do it normal, like, don't pull no shit. All right,
do it.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, fuck.
No, I need your help here.
What the fuck are you doing? What you saying to him?
You want your money or not?
See, it's kind of funny. This teller here, he's doing like the black lady thing. The black lady, not my problem kind of a thing. But he's acting like a TSA agent or a black lady at the post office or a black lady at the DMV or whatever. But it's not even just like the depiction of a black person using the tiny amount of power that they have over white people, and so they use it in order to be really the true Karens of the world, right? Trying to flex in these really insignificant, stupid, in the way fucking ways, right? That just make your life more difficult for no good reason other than they can feel like they have some amount of power over you in that instance. And that's really why they're doing it. But it also kind of highlights the problem with multiculturalism in the first place, that all this stuff goes away if everyone's the same race. Perfect example, I have to get a, because of I live in the middle of fucking nowhere, and I don't have an address, basically. Like, I have to go and I have a P.O. box that, in order to get my mail. And when you go to get your P.O. box, you have to prove that you own land in the area or something like that. And I've been living here for years now. And the people at the post office know me because I've been getting my mail there for years now. And there is a non-white lady that, even though she's seen me for years, still demands that I bring in some proof that I live there, even though she sees me all the time. And this last time that I went in there to go get it approved, the white guy was working, and he was just like, yeah, don't worry about that. And it wasn't because of white guy's secret handshake. It's because he knows that I've lived there for years, and he didn't have some kind of weird desire to flex some kind of power over the white man. That he knew that this is just bullshit. I know you're not trying, like, what could you possibly be trying to do by pretending to live here for a P.O. box kind of a thing, right? But anyway, that's the kind of behavior that they're kind of highlighting. Again, unintentionally, because it's a significant scene. Like, it's not like a short scene. Like, I'll play the whole thing here in a second. It almost to the degree that it seems a little like unnecessary. Like, the scene just it doesn't seem like it should even be there. And I can't think of why they would put it in there other than to either kind of highlight that unintentionally from the viewpoint of an Asian guy who doesn't really know what he's doing when he does this. Or maybe he is trying to make the black guy, who's supposed to be the rich white guy, seem mad and unreasonable. But that's not how it comes across.
Hello? Hello?
Fuck.
No, I need your help here.
What the fuck are you doing? What you saying to him?
You want your money or not? Excuse me.
I'm sorry, sir, we're closed.
This is an emergency, and I need some money now.
Well, my till here has already been emptied. You'll have to come back. We reopen at 9 in the morning Monday.
Monday?
I fucking believe this.
I can't wait until Monday. I need to have some money now.
Well, you can go to the money machine around the corner.
Wait a minute. You don't understand. Look, I need more money than that.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. There's nothing I can do.
Jesus Christ. Let me talk to your superior.
Well, I'm in charge of the window here, sir.
I'll give you in charge of the window. I need to talk to whoever's the president of this bank.
Well, as far as this window is concerned, sir, I'm the head of the bank.
Look, you turn around and go inside and get me the goddamn president of this goddamn bank. Now.
Go. Just go.
You have a good evening, sir.
I want your name.
Just fucking go.
I'm just a little prick.
See, all I can come up with is they're trying to make the white, you know, / black guy, the rich white guy, look like he's being unreasonable, when in a ethnically homogenous society, the bank teller would have helped out. Would have been like, all right, well, it's an emergency. Oh, well, I'll help you out. You know, like, you're obviously a big client of theirs if you're like living in that big fucking mansion. Let me at least go get the manager and see what we can do. But no, he flexes his power. So now John Travolta, he finds himself in a pickle. because the bank doesn't open until Monday, and he needs this money, and it's Friday afternoon. So now he's got to figure out what to do all weekend now that he's kidnapped this guy and likes to yell at him like a black man.
Now look, try and get out, motherfucker, try.
Try, I'm telling you, that all the spaghetti neck jokes. Resist.
Try and get out, motherfucker, try.
Resist. okay, I can do this. Meanwhile, back at home, they throw this little scene in here to try to show even more racism of white people because they don't want to race mix.
Well, it's about time. Thaddeus, you know how much work has gone into tonight. You could at least respect the time that I put into it.
Hey, Mom.
Oh, hello.
This is Cheryl.
Disgusting. Although the funny thing is, this is exactly how a black woman would act. Black women hate it when black guys are with white chicks. They hate it. They super hate it. So this isn't really... this. In fact, if anything, it's this is opposite world. Because a white woman would be excited. A white boomer woman would be excited that they had not raised a racist boy. Oh, thank goodness, my little boy didn't grow up racist. All of our propaganda worked. Thank God. So John Travolta forces the rich black guy into some homeless guy's house. And tries to figure out like what he's supposed to do until Monday. Meanwhile, at the fancy rich black people event where the black guy was supposed to be at. And of course, that part's real, you know, like the yes, the Negro children. We're helping them. Whoa! What is that? Look at that stage. That's looking very Star of David. You guys see that? What is that? Okay. Wonder where they shot this at, because that doesn't look like set design. That looks like the real location. Wonder if they shot this in like some kind of, child sex trafficking place. So they walk all the white children onto the Star of David, I guess. Oh, look at that. The big old Star of David there. Everyone stand on the Star of David, children. Oh, boy. Look at that. Okay. Anyway. And helping hands. It's the children. We got to help the starving white kids. Then they find the car of the missing black guy. And the cops launch into action, looking for the missing black man, who has been taken to some street food place somewhere downtown for a meal while John Travolta tries to figure out what it is that he should do. But then, of course, the the evil white Nazis show up.
Hey, leave it on, man.
Philip, I'll pay you your money, but I can't wait until Monday. I have a lot at stake in a business deal, and I got to be there for it next Sunday. How about it?
Ain't my problem.
But let me tell you something. In another hour, there's going to be a lot of people looking for me. So let me get to a phone, and I'll give you more than the $3,000 you're asking for.
I don't want more than you want me. You ain't calling nobody, and that's fine.
How
you feel? Huh? Me having power over you like you had over me. What you looking for? Cops? There ain't no cops here. Unless they gotta be here. This belongs to them. This is their territory.
Hey, you know you can't drink around here. Put those away.
Fuck you.
The fuck up.
I'm sick of you guys coming around.
Just get us our fucking food.
Let's get so that decent people can't eat here anymore.
Hey, just fuck get you, us our fucking man. Food!
See, that's the other difference. There are poor white neighborhoods. This is not the behavior that you see in poor white neighborhoods, where they go to their local hangouts and are disrespectful to the other white people that are also poor in the poor white neighborhoods. This is the behavior that you see from blacks. Now, part of that, you could say, is the missing component that would be difficult to replicate in this situation, and that is, in a black neighborhood, the old white guy wouldn't be an old black guy, because old black guys, or just black guys in the hood, are statistically incapable of running these businesses, so they're often run by, you know, Koreans or Arabs or something. So this is twisted in two different ways. One, the white people just being disrespectful and assholes to the white old white guy owner. And two, just the fact that it would just, in a black neighborhood be a Korean or something like that. But things quickly escalate because in the 90s, of course, the big evils were the skinheads. Everyone was worried about the skinheads. I can't, if you've watched my stream for a while, you've seen several examples of the panic over skinheads in the 90s, and this is no different.
Hey, man, what time is it?
Hey, answer the man.
I'm not answering. Hey, what the fuck are you doing down here anyway?
Can't find a better looking date than that. What's up?
Let's go. Which one of you is the wife and which one of you is the husband? You are an item, right?
Am I invisible?
Are you deaf or what?
I'm fucking stupid.
Hey, why don't you leave him alone?
Hey, what you fucking up, man? I'll ask him a comment,
huh? Hey, fuck you!
Oh, Jesus. Fuck.
So that this was just poor writing and directing, because they needed to have skinhead violence, and then they didn't know how to get out of it once they started it, but that's how they get out of it, is they're just like, then the white old guy shoots him, and then everyone just walks away like, okay, well, that was fun, because that's what happens. And so they drive off, they're like, all right, and he goes to the homeless house again and ties him up to a pillar. And the homeless guy that lives there is like, man, you can't have him around here. Man, you're going to bring too much heat. I can't have no black man tied in. Once the black people find out, there's going to be trouble. There's going to be trouble. Meanwhile, back at the rich black people's house with white Aunt Jemima, this is another thing that I found interesting. Notice how, in order to pull this off, in order to show this the way that they're intending to show this, where, oh, we're just race swapping, but we can't do it entirely. We have to add a little black flavor to it a little bit. Notice how that the the white or the rich black people are drinking tea that's indistinct. It's like they just got a rich white guy's house and then they sort of made her dress kind of African-y. But that the black people, when they're rich, they want to be just like whites, apparently. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they just didn't have the budget for it, but I would have expected it to be decorated a little more Wakanda-y, but, you know, it is what it is. So the next morning, John Travolta brings the hostage with him to his son's school to take him out for his birthday, because he thinks that's going to be a good idea. I'll just have this black man tied up in my truck and no one's going to notice. And so, again, this movie is retarded in so many different ways, it doesn't really matter. And he tells his son, go into the store and just buy what you want, because, you know, he has to watch, he has to keep an eye on the hostage.
Hi.
Hostage.
Oh, no!
How about this one, Don? No, this one's good. This one's good. Oh, man, this is fucked up.
It's the one he wants.
You stay out of this. All right.
So, of course, you would never do it the other way around in a movie in the 90s, when one of the big arguments, of course, back then was that, we need more black Barbies, we need more black dolls, but for some reason when it's a white kid, like, he has to have the black doll. He doesn't want the white doll. So, again, they're not trying to do a symmetric swapping of the races. They're not trying to actually be any kind of coherent about this race swap that they're doing. It's just 100% built to make white people feel bad about themselves at every opportunity. And so, again, because that's the theme, when he comes out and says, I'm sorry, Dad, the money you gave me wasn't enough for me to buy the Negro, Captain Negro. Thankfully, the rich black man's there to help.
What's the matter, Don?
I need more money.
I don't got no more money.
Dad, you promised.
All right, here, that's it. That's all I got. Now go in there and get something that you can't get with that money.
Dad, that's not enough.
Well, get the white one. Get the white one. You like the white one.
I don't want that one. Dad, you promised. You promised I'd get whatever I wanted.
I got some money.
Hush up. What was it at?
In my shirt pocket.
All right, here. Go in there and do it quick. Get what you want.
Yeah,
I get to get Captain Negro.
Thank you.
And again, this is one of these examples of when you realize they're not really trying to do a race swap. They're trying to frame every scene as individual vignettes. And whatever is going to maximize white guilt, that's what they go with. That's the angle. And it's humiliating, of course, because the white kid wants to play with the black doll, and they make a big deal out of that. That's his big hero, is the black doll, and that he, you know, actually doesn't want to play with the white ones. Which, again, if this was trying to make a point that would make any kind of sense to the audience, a true race swap, you'd be going the exact opposite direction. This is another example of this, how they're trying to independently treat each scene as whatever will maximize white guilt.
Don seems like a nice kid.
Well, he is a nice kid.
You're a good father to him. You don't understand. You don't look like a criminal type.
What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
Got a wife, kids, nice family. Got a lot to lose. I don't quite understand why you jeopardize all of that for a couple of $1,000. It's not worth it.
Well, you think I want to be in this shit?
Obviously, nobody forced you to do it.
2 fucking minutes of your time to help me and none of this shit would happen. 2 minutes.
See, now all of a sudden it's his fault again. He's the bad guy again because this was the opportunity to show you that the reason why these black people that are committing crime in your community, the real reason that this is all happening is just you wouldn't take the 2 minutes to get to know them. That's really all it was. You didn't take the 2 minutes it would take to get to know them and help them out. So it's on you. They're forced into these situations. You can't relate to it. Why would you risk everything for a few thousand dollars? It's not worth it. Well, it's because it's your fault, Whitey. Then you have what can I learn? Because you have this in every movie in the 90s, especially buddy movies. In fact, buddy movies are just the whole movie is this, where you have a black guy and a white guy, like maybe they're partnered up as cops or something. And the entire time it's like, well, we're different, but our differences complement each other. And we, look, what can I would have thought that there'd be nothing that I, you know, Nick Nolte could learn from Eddie Murphy. But wouldn't you know it? I'm always surprised in our the way that our differences can actually be teaching moments. And I can learn something from the black man. Like that scene is in almost every, even if it's not about race somehow, like if that's not the overriding theme of the movie, there's always at least some version of this scene where it's like, oh, I mean, we can learn from each other's differences, even if it's something stupid, which in this case it has to be. And in many of those cases, it had to be. Because realistically, what is a rich, successful white billionaire or millionaire or whoever, whatever he's supposed to be, what is he going to learn from a poor black guy? Like, what is there to learn? Usually they go with violence. Like, usually that's what it is. You know, where they have that movie with Tim Robbins and Martin where, the white guy goes crazy because he thinks someone's banging, his boss is banging his wife. And so he breaks into his, you know, business and whatever. And he learns how to be a criminal from Martin, basically, because he's the straight edge white guy. Oh, the good thing this black man's here to show me how to be a criminal. And hilariously, that's often what they would do. That's often what they would do because it was relatable. You could get white people to think, oh, maybe I could be more violent. maybe I should be looking at ways of getting around the system and being a criminal. Because that's really, realistically, what are you supposed to show them doing? What are you supposed to show the black guy teaching the white guy? Oh, here's how you do your taxes. You know, it's like, what realistically, what's going to happen? And in this case, it's no different. It's just some mundane, stupid shit.
Why are you putting salt in your ketchup?
You put on the French fries and then the stick. If you put in the ketchup, you can control exactly how much salt you get in each French fry. Try it.
Not bad.
Wow, that's some crazy Negro science there. Good thing we learned from each other. I learned that you can put salt in ketchup And then you can control... I don't know what we're even doing here at this point. So they look at each other's family photos so they can show some kind of connection. But then John Travolta gets up, and of course, when he comes back, the black man has run away. The black hostage has run away. And he runs after him, tries to find him. But the black man breaks into a house to try to get to a phone. White chick.
Get out. You get out of this house.
No, wait.
Just get out.
Listen to me.
You get out of here.
So there's a lot to unpack there. The two things they're trying to accomplish with that scene is, and they'll talk about it here in a moment, is they're trying to basically show that gun violence among blacks is only a product of self-preservation, self-defense, has nothing to do with anything else. That's the only reason why there's any kind of gun violence. It's usually a little black girl trying to prevent herself from being raped. And Kent, you can totally relate to that, right? Just like you related to that scene right there. You got a little blonde white girl and she finds a black man in her house. Of course you'd want her to take a shot at him, I mean, so she doesn't get raped. And that's what happens when there's gun crime and black ghettos. It's something like that. Now you understand, Whitey. But also, the other thing they're gonna address here, it shows that, look, even if you're going to put yourself in the shoes of the rich black guy who's supposed to be the white guy, now you understand, like, you know, he was trying to understand why this black, you know, it's getting confusing, why John Travolta was willing to risk it all for just a few thousand dollars. And we, you know, as we learn, it's because he was forced in these circumstances. It was nothing out of, you know, nothing he did created these circumstances. He was forced to do this. And now finally the rich white guy, who's the black guy, can relate to this situation because he was forced into a situation where he had to break into someone's house. So they, you know, John Travolta overtakes him, and then, you know, they get him, and he ties him back up and brings him back to the homeless guy house or whatever. But that's when they have this this little discussion discussing the ethics of being forced into a situation where you have to break the law.
He was just waiting to get a chance to leave. I know it.
I started feeling sorry for you. I started making excuses for you. That you're poor, that you're ignorant.
Fuck you.
Inarticulate. I tried to justify what you were doing. There's no justifying you, Pinnock. I offered to pay you the money. I even offered to get you back your job. But no, that wasn't enough. Because you figure that the whole world owes you more than that.
The world don't owe me shit. You owe me something, motherfucker.
I don't owe you a goddamn thing, do you hear me? So you lost your job. Lots of people lose their jobs. Tough luck. Get another one, goddamn.
Fuck.
Give me these arms. Come on, give them to me.
Your job and your family is your problem, not mine. But you, you blame everybody else in the whole world but yourself, you son of a bitch.
You had nothing to do with it, right? All me. And in fact, you wouldn't even understand a guy like me doing this. Because you would never do it.
Never. I have too much respect for myself and other people to ever be a goddamn criminal.
You smug motherfucker. What'd you do back there in the house? You broke in, right? That's breaking and entering. Is that against the law? And you popped that guy upside his head. Now that's assault. Is that against the law?
That's completely different.
It's always different when it comes to you, isn't it?
You crackers. So, that's the only reason why black people are doing things. Now you understand, Whitey. Now you understand they're all victims of circumstance. And if you were put in a similar situation, you would do the same thing. You might talk a big game, but look at this guy. He was being so smug right after breaking the law, after being put into a similar situation, because black people are often being kidnapped and driven around with a gun to their head and forced to break into people's homes and assault people. So he hasn't tied up, but then he starts having some kind of cardiac event, I don't know. And I almost feel like they threw this in just because, again, it's bad writing, bad directing, bad job, Jappy McJapners. And they wanted to show him giving, the white, they had to have this shot in there. The white and the black guy lip locked. I'm positive that's why they had it in there. And so he gives him CPR and he revives him. Oh, he's back. But now he has to get him to a hospital. And then there's this funny scene that once again shows you why the race swap stuff is ridiculous. Why the race swap stuff is ridiculous. His truck breaks down because it's always breaking down. And he runs out to the street and he finds a white woman and says, "Hey, I need you to help me give someone a ride to the hospital." And she does. This is the one instance where actually it doesn't seem race swapped at all.
All right, Dan, I got a ride for you. Take you to the hospital.
That's called self-preservation. I like that look on her face.
Take you to the hospital.
She's like, fuck that shit. That's the look that every white woman should have when she sees this.
Take you to the hospital.
Yeah, no thanks. That sticks out like a sore thumb, doesn't it? But the funny thing is, what is it really saying? It's saying that black people wouldn't help out white people is what it's saying. That's really what it's saying. But of course, because every scene is individual, like every scene is just whatever's going to maximize white guilt. What the audience is seeing is a white woman making that face and driving away from a black man who needs help. The wide-eyed, holy shit. So anyway, she takes off, and now, in desperation, John Travolta, he feels bad, he feels responsible. He's the one that, he never thought this would lead to someone's death. He's just a good boy. He never hurt nobody. He was just put in this situation, so he just tries to get help the only way he knows how.
Put that thing away. Nick? You're crazy, man! Hey, what's going on, huh? Are you out of your mind? What the hell is wrong with you? Oh, man. Nick. What are you gonna do now, huh?
And obviously, we all know where this is going. He's coming right for us! Dun, dun, dun. Of course, you know, you gotta have that. And he dies. And the black man's like, fuck. I never knew they had life so hard. And so we get to the other ridiculous scene. The scene where the rich white/black guy goes to visit the widow and offer to give her money.
Yes?
I'm looking for Mrs. Pennock.
Just a minute. Marcia?
Mrs. Pennock, my name is Thaddeus Thomas. I knew your husband.
I know who you are. Stanley told me what happened.
I came to bring you something. Your husband thought that I owed him some money. I've added some, thinking perhaps you might be able to use it. Why don't you keep it? I could give you some more if you think it's not enough.
And how much do you think would be enough?
Dun, dun, dun. And the two stupid parts about that, obviously, A, she would not have refused the money. But there's a double meaning there at the end. How much do you think would be enough? The implication, of course, is it's never going to be enough. It's never going to be enough. You're going to be climbing up that mountain with that monkey on your back for the rest of existence. Because it will never be enough. And that, my friends, is the white man's burden. And it will never stop. It will never fucking stop. All right, let's take a look at Hyper Chats. This could be the last time. I think it's possible there's one more, but we don't know. We don't want to risk it. So I do appreciate you guys being very generous tonight. And we'll get the entropy thing figured out. I'll probably do some test streams tomorrow to see if I can work out what's wrong with that. I don't know why. I should be streaming to it. I don't know where it's going. But we'll see. Jesse Poe Holiday says, "What's your take on Molyneux? Have you watched him lately? I think he's a cuck and a wasted potential. He had awoken so many of us, pointed out the lies in history and then current politics, and was creeping towards the JQ, but cucked out. He also never addressed his mistake in going all in for Trump in 2016. Liar and coward. He became what he was once against, a do-nothing coward boomer. Now he's making vids about cat moms on dating sites and rambling about abstract philosophy. What a waste." Well, I think you summed it up right there. So I think you I think, that's basically it. I don't know what I would add to that. That's what happened. It was wasted potential. It makes you wonder, though, where did he think that road was going to take him? It's like these conspiracy tards that, if they're serious people and not just wanting to believe in some kind of, movie-like narrative, if you're serious about facts and trying to figure out the source of some of these problems, inevitably, where does it lead? You know, there's a reason why, all roads lead to the JQ. Maybe not all roads, but like the vast majority of them. And so where did he think he was going to go with that? And so I don't know. And again, the big question mark there is he's claimed that like his family's Jewish, and then he's like, well, they're not Jewish, and whatever. I don't know. It does seem a bit odd that he, at a crucial moment, sort of bailed. Maybe he made his money. Maybe he made his money with Bitcoin and just wants to, why risk it when you got the biscuit? I don't know. You'd have to ask him. Has anyone asked him? This would be a good question to pose to him directly and just see if he would answer. But that would be a good answer or a good question. Wandering Fool with the gigantic dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is.
$500,000.
All right. Wandering Fool. Really appreciate that. That's really, really helpful. And, really, I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Wandering Fool says, figured that I would make my last Hyper Chat donation a good one. Thanks for doing what you do. Well, that is a good one. And I really appreciate that. And, thanks for helping out. Hopefully it's not going to be a rough transition, but it's very, very much appreciated there. Wandering Fool, everyone, big salutes in chat for Wandering Fool there. And we'll definitely have to get a Wandering Fool beehive put together. In fact, I'm going to make a note of that now, so I don't forget here, because it's spring's coming. Spring's coming. I don't know how many hives I'm going to have alive. I had this line of hives where I was having to move some rocks that were right in front of the hives, and I was loath to do it because they're kind of mean, or at least half of them were kind of mean. And so I've been putting it off, but it was like finally cold enough the other day. I was like, well, it's probably so cold they won't attack me. And I was over there moving them, and there was like zero activity. Like two out of like the 10 hives that were there had any kind of bee activity. I was like, oh, that's not a good sign. Maybe they're all in there doing okay, but I don't think so. I think we're going to have some losses. We didn't get any rain. We got like almost no rain this year. So, we'll see. But, definitely we'll start a new colony, if nothing else, the Wandering Fool colony. So thank you again, Wandering Fool. N7 Patriot Spartan says, hey, Dev, I'm typing this hours before you start. Did you check out the murders of Shannon Christian, pronounced Shannon, and Chris Newsom? If you didn't, it's partly my fault because I forgot to mention it happened in Knoxville. Can't wait for the stream. No, I haven't had a chance to do that. Just because, but I'll check it out. It's in my notes for sure. Simbi says, my team is getting another offshore Indian soon. A coworker interviewed him this morning. No technical questions were asked, so he's being hired not based upon his technical abilities, but other reasons. Meanwhile, a friend at Microsoft has a son with a BS in CS, and no one is hiring locally. Yeah, you know, go figure, right? But hey, you know, it's don't worry, guys, it'll be worth it somehow when we live in India. Gorilla Hands! Gorilla Hands says, hey, Devin and chat, this is my third attempt at posting this comment, so here I go. Am I the only one who thinks that a gay AI Jew, Sam Altman, looks similar to Howard the Duck from the movies in the 80s? Can I get a womp womp? He does a little bit, huh? Let me see. He mostly just looks like a child molester, but let's see here. Where is Sam Altman? Where is a picture of you? I mean, kind of. Let's do this. All right. Should do a side by side, huh? I don't know, maybe a little bit. Is Howard the Duck Jewish? Maybe that's what it is. Let's do this. That's a little terrifying. all right, I gotta stop looking at that. All right, then we got John Skywalker. Hey, what are you gonna get on War Strike with Warren Balog and Eric Stryker? They said they would like to have you on, and you all have many of the same views. Their shows are 6 to 8 hours, so perhaps you would be on for half. They also do film reviews. Well, again, they'd have to talk to me. If they can DM me or whatever. I'm not hard to reach. Well, I'm a little hard to reach, but I don't think they've ever DM'd me, unless I haven't seen it. Snake Oil Politics says, here's $10. Keep those vital pollinators in line. Well, what few have survived, I will definitely keep them in line. But yeah, hopefully we'll do okay this spring. Spring, I don't know. I feel like spring's usually, even when we don't get a lot of rain, we still get a decent spring. It's just a matter of the summer that kills it. It's if we don't get rain in the summer and we don't get that extra spring after the summer, that's when it's a death sentence for a lot of bees. But I know at least some of the colonies are still alive. Gorilla Hand says, I have a movie suggestion for you. Do a deep dive on. It's called Only the Lonely from the 90s, starring John Candy as a middle-aged singer. Singer? Is he a singer? Cop in Chicago living with his mother. His mother is based Irish woman, and it's amusing the stereotypes and names she calls other ethnicities. I vaguely remember that movie. John Candy, Death by Ham Sandwich. Gorilla Hand simply says,
faggots!
Christ Pilled says, thank you, wandering fool. Devin, your encouragement for us to build dynasties resonates big time. It'd be awesome if you'd put your research skills to work finding and then doing a stream on a family who built a dynasty without selling out their people and built white power. They might be hard to dig up since old money is super private since the Great Depression, but I bet you could find some cool people. They'd shine a flashlight for those of us trying to do the same thing who are stumbling through a dark building. Well, two things. One, I don't think there's a lot of people that have done that. That's the problem. That's the issue. And secondly, I don't know that I'd want to draw attention to a family that had, for obvious reasons. Although I don't know that many would exist. So it's the kind of thing that you probably don't want a lot of publicity about, but maybe talking about methods in which that can happen would be all right. But yeah, I just don't think there's a lot. Unfortunately, that's the problem. I don't think there's most rag to riches stories, they're leaving out a giant component, which is either venture capital money or a rich family or, you know, like very, it doesn't have, like I remember they used to tell you back in the 90s that Bill Gates, as an example, was this big success story and how, oh, he started Microsoft in his garage and they made it sound like he's just like this lower middle class kid that he was good with computers and now he has Microsoft. And then you find out his parents were bankers, you know, and it's like, oh, well, that's a little missing component to the story, isn't it? And unfortunately, that's often the case. In fact, I'm not aware of any story where that's not, where at least where you go from zero to actual money. I mean, I know lots of stories where someone has grown their business and been successful and, you know, been like in the upper middle class realm. I mean, even my dad went, I would say, he took our family from, I'd say, middle class, borderline lower middle class to upper middle class. So it does exist in that respect, but I don't think there's a whole lot of stories of white people going from zero to hero, at least not in the way that we're discussing with the dynasty. I think it's generational for it to work. It takes several generations for it to work, unless you have that money backing you to begin with. Graham Playing Games says, your last stream about that TV movie is a very good example of how propaganda on television and movies has been very slyly distorting history. It seems that most people understand about history, whether American Civil War or Second World War, is basically a cartoonish saccharine caricature. Well, that's the thing, is most people base their knowledge on of the Holocaust as an example on things like Schindler's List. That's the whole issue. It's what I've been trying to really hammer home in a lot of people, is that people, their minds work in many ways like an AI. And if you just train an AI on woke bullshit, you get woke bullshit on the way out. That's the same thing with Americans. If you train their minds on Schindler's List, that's, you know, what else do they have to pull information from? So that's, unfortunately, I'd say the majority of the data that all Americans are trained on, it's fiction. And Jews make the fiction. So it's Jewish. So in the same way Jews are programming ChatGPT and it creates that Jewish bias, that's what they did with people first. Friendly Neighborhood Fascist says, I guess you don't have much time to sit down and read, but I highly recommend Merchants of Sin. I went through it again, and it's a perfect complement to your existing catalog. It breaks down the landmark cases that opened to the gates of hell in the 1960s, how Americans failed to stop it. It's a short book that covers enough to provide you material for 5 or 6 streams. There's an audiobook on VNN forum if you prefer. Just skim it and see. The court cases like Sam Roth versus United States were the beginning of the end. You won't regret it. You won't waste your time. I don't know if I've added that to my notes yet already, but I'll add it now in case I haven't. I feel like that's in there somewhere. All right, there we go. Flatulent Phil with a big dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. All right. Flatulent Phil with the big dono says, here's to the king of content, Devin Stack, and a shout-out to Wandering Fool. Well, I appreciate that. Also, a shout-out to Flatulent Phil here. Big dono support there. Beach Boys! Beach Boys, an answer to Wonderland, or Wonderland, did you mean Wandering? Fool's question in chat earlier. It was the South African Boomer edition from March 7th, 2021. Figured you earned me looking it up for you with the ginormous Dick Dono. Save some pussy for the rest of us, bro. Well, there you go. Not sure what your question was, but there's the answer to your question. Courtesy Beach Boys. Horrible Hangover says, Devin, thank you for all that you do. We are so lucky to have you on our side. Someone with your artistic and storytelling abilities could have easily sold out. Instead, you live by a simple principle, the truth. And while it's probably not easy, it's admirable. I'm wondering if you could share what you do when you get demoralized. Your work is prolific, and despite the rough times, it seems like you're always kicking ass. I wish I didn't, but sometimes I lose hope. Well, first of all, thank you for the very kind words there. What do I do? I don't lose hope. That's the thing. I don't lose hope. Because that's the thing is, I often say zoom out the graph, and usually it's to illustrate a downward trend. But it's also, it's not the end of white people. If you zoom out the graph, another way to think of that is, we've been around for a long time, thousands of years. And this isn't how this story ends. It's not how this story ends. And there have been some rough ass times for Europeans in the past. In fact, Europeans have been colonized by Muslims, by non-whites. They've been enslaved. They've been wiped out. They've been genocided. We've faced all of these issues in the past, and we've always overcome them. So I don't ever get hopeless. In fact, I kind of take it as a compliment that, God or even if it's just circumstance is what has led for me to be alive during these times. That this is something that I feel like this is a challenge that the people who are alive today are meant to meet. So it doesn't give me any kind of despair or something like that. That's people that talk like that are just, or you know what it is? It's funny to me because the people that say, oh, the black pillars, it's all about despair. Those are the people that despair all the time. And that's how you know, because that's what they worry about all the time. If all they're doing is talking about despair and fear and dicks. Can't imagine what I'm talking about. It kind of gives you a window into what's inside their head. You know, like what's going on in there. But no, I don't. And what are the small things that I do to take my mind off things? I mean, I think I'm pretty open about that. I fix old radios, old tube electronics, and I beekeep and, garden and, you know, side normal stuff. I think it's important for people to have some kind of hobby, and preferably a hobby that, even if you're not going to turn it into a profession, a hobby that is productive in some way where potentially it could turn into a profession, right? Which is why your hobby shouldn't be video games. Because it's, you know, It's like, technically maybe it could be, but I mean, you know, it's not going to be a profession, you know? So, But if you could find something that you enjoy doing, that if you got really good at, potentially you could turn it into a productive endeavor. That's probably the best thing to do. And I have more than one. I feel like I have several things that, because look, I could not very many people fix old tube electronics anymore. And I don't know that I'm good enough to like charge people for my time yet, but potentially if I was in a tight spot, I could fix stuff for money. And you know, obviously with the beekeeping stuff. So, that'd be my advice. John Skywalker says, you see that plane crash in Washington, look it up. I think it's terrorism or another case of diversity is our strength. It's too early to know. Way too early to know. Maybe now there's some breaking news because it's been a few more hours, but I doubt anything significant's come out. Man of low moral fiber also says Hawk flew too close to the sun, or too close to the plane, so that's probably what's going on. We'll find out more later. Horrible Hangover says, what have you seen or what do you recommend for combating lust pornography addiction? We've talked about the Jew merchant meme. It has good imagery, but for some reason it doesn't seem to help with this particular issue. One last thank you for the evening to you and others, members of the community. As bleak as it sometimes feels, especially living in a large liberal city, it gives me hope knowing there are others out there. It doesn't help you to think of like the merchant meme going like just replace, if you're looking at porn, replace the face of the woman with the merchant meme. And if that doesn't do it for you, man, I don't know what would. That's never been like my big struggle, porn. I could understand how it could be when you're younger, especially, you know, maybe if it was more available when I was a teenager, it would have been an issue. It's tough other than if it's a, just go, you got to go cold turkey. You got to go cold turkey. Literally with everything, you have to go cold turkey. That's not one of these things where you can, really nothing is. You shouldn't try to wean yourself off slowly off of things. Unless there's some medical reason, right? Like you're addicted to fucking heroin, you're going to get the shakes but even then, I think some of that's exaggerated. Go cold turkey with it. Make yourself accountable. If it's really a big problem, I don't know, try to find like a support group or something like that. It's a tough one for me because like I said, it's not something that I struggle with. But I know that a lot of people, especially if you were exposed at a much younger age, I could see why that'd be a big problem. Or just try to think of your grandma watching you. One of the things that, you know, I brought up on Twitter is that genealogy is important. It's something that I always took for granted because I came, you know, I was raised by a Mormon family that was into genealogy. Both my grandfathers on either side compiled a thick binder full of our family history with family trees going back hundreds of years, lots of photos with bios of each person, like what they did for a job, maybe a funny story about them or something like that. Their history, like where they, you know, as they, because you know, my family were pioneers, you know, when they traveled west, how west this one went, and then how west this one went, and all these sorts of things. And I didn't quite appreciate it when I was a kid because it just seemed like a boring Christmas. Because I think I got them for Christmas presents, right? And I was like, I wanted a Nintendo game instead, or whatever. But I'm so glad I have those things. And one of those things, or one of those reasons are, and really it's independent of having these, but more just living in a environment where this is how my family thinks. You get a sense that you're part of a genetic line of people. you get a sense that you are an extension of your ancestors. And even if you're not a religious person where you are not thinking that literally your ancestors are up in heaven or wherever, and they're watching you and rooting for you and hoping that you succeed as, you know, as their progeny going through the world, and hoping that you live up to that expectation that they have for you, even if you don't literally believe in that, and I to some degree do literally believe in that, it gives you some context as to like, it makes you should feel some kind of responsibility to the people that came before you and understand the disappointment they would have if, you know, if you've got some kick-ass grandfather or great-grandfather or whatever, just think about him knowing that you're jerking off to fucking porn. And by the way, most porn it's produced by Jews, and it's a violation of white women. It's a Jewish violation. It's almost like a Jewish sacrifice of white women, and you're jerking off to it. And if that doesn't help, I don't know what else to tell you. But good luck with that. And like I said, it's just go cold turkey. Don't think to yourself, tomorrow morning I'm going to stop watching porn. You've already stopped. As of this moment, you're done. You already watched your last porn. You're done. You're done now. See how freeing that is? You're done. Man of low moral fiber. Well, he's got some advice for you. He says, go camping for 2 weeks. You mentally weak gooner. If you quit looking at porn, your brain will get better. And I'm sorry to call you a mean name, but we need you to get better. Yeah, you need to get bullied a little bit. We don't tolerate gooners in these parts. And if it helps, yeah, go camping for a week. Go somewhere where there's no electronics. If you have that capability, for whatever reason you lack the willpower, just go somewhere you don't have that capability, or shut your internet off for like a week. Corn Pop the Bad Dude says the church had withdrawn masses of the most valuable blood from its natural destiny through the persecutions of witches. This is the path of Judaism in the 19th century, especially in the time immediately behind us, was more bloodless, but it affects our national power, by no means less effective. The Jewish destruction of the German woman corresponds to the Christian church persecution of witches. Both have a common spiritual faith, Yahweh. So there's a quote apparently from Richard Dar, Reich Minister of Food and Agriculture, 1942. So obviously Corn Pop the Bad Dude is of the opinion that Christian persecution of witches was bad. I don't know, maybe in Germany, but I'll tell you, in America, I think it was pretty fun, and we should bring it back. Zazzy McTazbot says, last stream I commented about the blacks not being able to say ask. It stuck with me that you said it was a hardware issue. I thought, no, it can't be. I understand they won't know the difference between rays and rays or fire and pyre, but they can't say ask. But by November, where's part two of this? But I remember that I watched a podcast where they read headlines from BBC Pidgin English. Also, it's universal. It's not like ask, axe is a West Coast or Southern thing. It must be very frustrating, or frustrating as they say, to have such hardware issues, but not goddamn can't even say ask. It's not that hard. Well, that's the least of their worries when it comes to when it comes to hardware issues. But yeah, Corn Pop the Bad Dude says by November 1923, 33 radio controlled flights had been successfully flown. On September 15th, 1924, following two flawless radio-controlled manned flights from takeoff to landing, NRL first in U.S. history to remotely fly pilotless aircraft. Yeah, I mean, like, but different aircraft of different complexities. Like, there's radio control. I mean, you can buy a radio-controlled mini helicopter and mini airplane at a hobby store, and you know, they're essentially this. You know, they work on the same principle. So it's not like it's a new fancy thing. But Blackhawk specifically can fly unmanned now, and that is a new thing, a relatively new thing, because of the complexity of the aircraft and whatnot, and just, you know, that's not what they were intended to do when they built them. Man of low moral fiber, if those helicopter pilots were black, well, I think that's already not going to happen. I don't think, or maybe it's gotten worse. Are they letting blacks fly helicopters now? I'd be surprised by that, because they're just expensive, you know. But who knows? Maybe we can rest easy knowing they're with Kobe in Dunk Hollow now, where the grape soda never runs out and the bitches and brothers rape never snitch. There you go. Ford enthusiast. The most surprising part of this order, meaning the executive order we talked about earlier, was finding out that Jews weren't already afforded a protected legal status. Well, that was started by Trump last administration, or at least that it was more enshrined by law last Trump administration. This is just him connecting the dots for the DOJ to act on it. Thanks for all that you do, and fuck Stripe and the two potato apes that own it. Well, there you go. Zazzy McTazbot, or did that one. Night Nation Review says a law against hating Jews is usually the beginning of the end for the Jews. A quote attributed to Joseph Goebbels. Is that a real quote? I saw people passing that around. I don't know if that's a real quote. If it is, though, unfortunately, though, it ended up being the end, ultimately the end of Goebbels, too. So it's, you know, like, no one's managed to get rid of this infection yet. So there's something to keep in mind. Yeah, I mean, look, in the meantime, it's not, I mean, it's no comfort to me that in the meantime, we're still, you know, it opens a lot of us up to legal jeopardy, and it really sucks. And do I think it's something that is going to affect me directly in the immediate? Probably, hopefully not, you know, but it's that road is being paved. Richard says it's disappointing to see people who should know better celebrating Trump's EOs. They will get shut down easily in the courts. But I want to own libtards, sent from my jitterbug bottom text, says the bloviating spiritual boomer. It's like they haven't learned their lesson from the last time. Well, they haven't. And this is, look, I said last summer that this was going to be what it was like, that we did this for 4 years and we're going to do it for another 4 years. I already know how it's going to, I'm already used to it. Like, there's a lot of people, it's kind of funny. It's like they think they can shame me into liking Trump, you know, or something like that. It's like, you guys did this. Did it work last time? Did it work last time or no, it didn't. You know, and look, some people are new to the party. That's the other thing too, is you got to remember some people should know better. Well, everyone should know better, but you know, everyone should also be a lot smarter than they are, and they're not. You know, it is what it is. But there's a lot of newcomers to the scene, a lot of people that were politically unaware, and they're slightly less politically unaware, and it's the whole, they think they know more than they do, and they'll learn their lesson the way that a lot of people learn their lesson the first time around. And look, I can't say I hate everything Trump's doing. The optics of what Trump's doing on the border is good. It's good for white people to reassert themselves in a way that in the 1990s they would have been too terrified to voice. That's a good thing. It's good, even if it actually amounts to nothing, it's still good to see white people, even if it's bullshit, screaming about mass deportations without fear of looking like an asshole. No one would do that. In fact, that would be relegated to like the lowest of the low class anti-Semite bigot, you know, skinheads. In the 1990s, if you said anything like that, I mean, look, a lot of my friends and I, we still said it back in the 90s because some of us have been, if you've lived in the part of the in parts of the country that have been most affected by diversity, this has been a lifelong issue. Okay, some people have not grown up in areas that have been constantly fucked by non-whites like I have. Well, increasingly that's, you know, if the younger you are, the more likely that's the case. But there's still a lot of people that would have been afraid to voice opinions like that even just 5 to 10 years ago, who are now screaming the loudest again, even if it's foolhardy and ridiculous. It's not a bad thing to normalize that kind of sentiment in white people. And there are, look, the Trump administration isn't going to be all negatives. That's the other thing that people mischaracterize. They think that, you know, I see every single thing that is a product of Trump as a negative, and it's not the case. It's not even the case of the first administration. Trump normalized a distrust in media and a distrust in the institutions in a way that, really, I don't know how else that would have happened. Now, unfortunately, a lot of that trust has been rebuilt by Trump himself, especially as it, you know, in regards to the institutions. But it's funny. One of the things you'll notice is a lot of cognitive dissonance with the people who want to simultaneously claim that with Kash Patel and Trump's FBI, that he's finally defeated the deep state, but at the same time, Patriot, whatchamacallit, the guys in the khakis, Patriot Front, that they're somehow still feds. And it's like, okay. So there's always some kind of silver lining, and believe it or not, I'm not immune to them. Let's see. Horrible Hangover says, "Men at Lone Roll Fiber, you're right. I need to be shamed. It just is an easily concealed addiction. I want to reset my mind so I can focus on family, friends, and building a future for us." That is correct. Like I said, if you have a means of cutting it off because you can't do it with willpower, then find a way. Not your dick. Don't cut that off, but cut off the, although in a perfect world, we might have to do that to people like you. Cut off your internet somehow. Richard says, "Regarding the use of H-1Bs and Indians, I get the impression that employers also use them because Jewish media gives people the impression that if someone is a noodle-armed twink, they must be the biggest brain around ever. Big brain. It's like life is an RPG to them, and that's their build and class." Yeah, maybe a little bit. I'm sure that has a little bit of influence on them. Nature, Love Nature, 1209, says, "Longtime listener, thank you for what you do, Devin. You are the man and the true hero of our people. This is only moderate dick money, as I lost my job because of Pajit's. Once I'm working again, I shall return with big dick money. God bless you, brother, and hail with Trump. To hell with Trump. He is a demon." Well, there you go. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say he's a literal demon, but he is definitely a race traitor. He definitely prefers Jews over his own people and will backstab us at every opportunity. So, I mean, might as well be at that point, right? Thank you for the support, Nature Love, and hopefully you're able to find a Pajit-free work zone. We got to at some point maybe figure out a way of, I wish that someone could come up with some kind of like white employment agency kind of a thing. I don't know how you do that though. Unfortunately, get around the laws that prevents that. Nazi Dice with a big dono.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. Nazi Die says, if the federal bitches of Israel, a.k.a. the FBI, or any other Zogbots try raiding my house for saying the truth and making silly memes, well, I can't say the rest of it, but, you know. again, I don't think you got to worry about feds coming after people like us in the immediate. I just think that road is being paved. And what happened with that EO is not insignificant because while it isn't an executive order and it can be undone by the next administration, what administration is going to be crazy enough to get rid of the anti-Semitism executive order? You know what I mean? Like, good luck with that. So it's something we have to be mindful of and be aware of because... It will affect us. It will. It's just a matter of when. And we'll see. We'll look and see. Keep an eye on what the prosecutions are in the next little bit here, because I'm assuming they're going to do that. They will use the power of the federal government to at least, you know, take in some of these pro-Palestine guys at first, and they'll tie them to terrorism. And look, maybe some of them will be tied to terrorism. I don't know. But we'll have to see how those legally play out and how those get challenged and what precedents set. And then that'll give you an idea as to how long that fuse is. Brody says, hi, Devin. It looks like you are having a surge of donations tonight. Are you getting a sudden influx of new fans since Trump took office? No, I'd say quite the opposite. I've pissed off a lot of people, which I expected, now that Trump has taken office, because you've got a whole bunch of people who loved me just a couple years ago who now can't prevent themselves from hallucinating about what I'm saying and jerking themselves off to everything Trump says and does and freaking out anytime anyone remotely criticizes him. So like I said, I did this for 4 years. I already know this is what happens. It's more, if you're noticing tonight, it's because Stripe is shutting down hyper chats on Odyssey any day now. I forget the exact day, but I don't think it's at midnight tonight. You know, I don't think it's now, but I think it is in the next couple days here. I don't know the exact time that's going to take place. So that is why, that's what explains that. Zazzy McTazbot says, censorship kills free speech. Self-censorship kills free thought. And that's what will happen. A lot of people, especially after you see those first arrests using that kind of a law. I mean, who's going to fucking criticize Jews online after that? You know what I mean? And that's what they've got going on. You're in like other parts of the Anglosphere. That's what you have going on in like the UK, that's what you've got going on in Australia to some extent. And that's just, unfortunately, that's where we're headed, it looks like. Bill Monaghan. Bill Monaghan says, good morning, Mr. Stack. Have you heard of a YouTuber called Banned History? Last week, they released a detailed piece on the situation in Springfield that explicitly calls out the involvement of Jewish DC and in various international NGOs, how it was all planned by the feds, had no idea how deep it ran. No, I'm not aware of that. I will I'll add that to my notes to take a look at that. That sounds interesting. Not surprised. I know of other cases like that where they... Oops, why'd that only copy half that? There we go. They purposely find white communities to ship these people to with the full intent of destroying the racial solidarity of those areas. That's 100% what they're doing. Night Nation Review says buymeacoffee.com also uses Stripe. It also has a donation pop-up feature for live streams. Just FYI, if you want to have a similar system to get around Odyssey dropping them. Well, makes me wonder if they use Stripe, then Buy Me a Coffee seems like they wouldn't work either. I think I'm going to at least try to get Entropy up and running. I've never used it. We'll see how annoying it is to use it with it's one more window I got to have open. And I don't know how, I've never used it at all. I've never chatted in it, or I don't even know what to expect. I was expecting the night to be like the trial run, and it's not working at all, or at least not the way that I thought it was supposed to. But we'll see. We'll get it figured out. Not a big deal. Nature Love says, I would like to propose a new principle for whites that we should follow. Neither blacks nor Jews care about us or our suffering or our problems or our future. So why should we care about theirs? Let us abandon care for those who hate us and move on to taking care of our people. Yeah, easier said than done. However, I do think that the current selection pressures being applied to white people, that sort of white person is inevitable. Because the people who have these suicidal tendencies will take themselves out of the gene pool. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, regarding slavery and the white guilt for it, you've had an all-time great quote before. Quote, the story didn't have a happy beginning. Why do you expect it to have a happy ending? Exactly. And look, it's not even have like an ending yet. Slavery has always existed, and it exists today. The technology around slavery changes, and the form that it manifests changes, but the concept of it will always exist. Slavery to false gods, being a slavery, says, does success on a piece of land justify genocide and acquiring it? Does a Bedouin not having the ingenuity to build engines mean that the oil under his ancestral... Is this the guy who's mad at... the Indian stuff? Not his. Does he deserve his natural riches less than you? Does he deserve to claim it at all? Probably not knowing of it. Well, I'd say in those instances, it really doesn't matter who deserves what. It's just the way things are, my man. Like, that's the thing you got to understand. Do the bees that were completely wiped out, the European bees that were completely wiped out by the Africanized bees that were released into the ecosystem, that they deserve it? No. But did it happen? Yeah. Because that's just the way it's the law of the jungle, man. And we can either accept that and live our lives accordingly, or we can pretend like there's some kind of magical justice ghost that's going to, help us. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, nigga, you a fucking robot, nigga. Exactly. Yeah, that's what happens when you race swap, I guess. Like, what do you think a group of white kids would be doing with that robot? Not beating the shit out of it. Like a bunch of fucking monkeys. Nazi Die says, made in the USA used to mean quality and made by white people. Now it just means diversity hires made it and a Jew or a white trader signed off on it. Nowadays, it only matters when buying my dog's food so it won't kill him. My best guitars were made in Japan in factories of homogeneous high IQ people. Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of Japanese stuff is being made in China now, too. China is getting better at manufacturing. And I would submit they manufacture better stuff than America. And not always. There's a lot of examples of bad manufacturing because they use a lot of slave labor. But there's also a lot of examples where they make iPhones there. You know what I mean? So, yeah, not a lot of Made in America pride these days. Funkin' Android says these Palestine protests have been fake and gay this whole time. Did you see the recent Israeli hostage nonsense on Twitter? The masks, the costumes, the banners, Hamas soldiers in clean, creased fatigues equipped with Israeli firearms. People really need to start ripping these masks off. Well, I don't know that it's fake to that degree. I think that they're trying to use it for propaganda, too, so they're going to dress for the occasion. And if they have Israeli-made weapons, it's because that's where they're getting them from, Israeli soldiers that they, when they did their raids, that they took them from. So, I mean, I don't know. Is it all fake? Look, obviously Israel funded Hamas in the early days for sure. Do they still do it? I don't know. But I don't think it's all just fake. Bessemer! Hi, Devin. I wish the black people really were how they were portrayed by Hollywood. Don't we all? Don't we all? And boomers do think that that's how they are. That's what they believed. That's why we're in this mess. Corn Pop the Bad Dude says, your story about your mom breaking down in tears concerning the kid in the red jacket. My mom was the same way, thinking I'd have plenty of black friends in the U.S. Let's just say empirical evidence since coming to the U.S. has set her straight. Yeah, what he's talking about is when I was a kid, my mom picked me up from the bus stop and she saw that I was talking to a black kid and asked me who my friend was she asked me to identify someone and I said, oh, it's the kid in the red coat. And she looked over and the only kid in the red coat was the only black kid. And she started crying, which disturbed me immensely, because my mom's crying. I was like, what's wrong? Which is why I remember it. But it was because I didn't say the black kid. I said the kid in the red coat. And so she thought racism was over finally. Man of low moral fiber, that's an 8-pointed star, not a 6-pointed star. Maybe. 6 of 1, 8 of another. Colonel Edwards says, hey, Devin, if you were to expatriate from the U.S., where would you go? The countries are fairly affordable where you could raise children in safety and would have very little trouble establishing residency. I don't know. I've never seriously looked at it because I kind of don't want to leave the land of my ancestors. I kind of want to win this battle. But, you know, look, if push comes to shove, my ancestors were pioneers and settlers, so maybe that gene will get activated. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, please go back to the Freaknik edition and get the clip of the black guy asking, how come they never show brothers stepping together, and have it lead into the nigga you a robot nigga clip. That would be Kino. That's the one where the guy's name is Pot. They had a guy whose name is Pot. Like, what was the name of one of the black guys? My name is Pot. My line eye says, thanks, Devin. I just wanted to see a Negro get shot. I'm happy now. Well, I guess sort of, right? In a way. Andromeda says, Devin, I join the stream late. Our hyper chat's ending. Yes, they are. I don't know if tonight's the night, but potentially. My lying eye says, Devin, did Bill Gates steal Windows from Xerox? No, Steve Jobs. Well, yes, in a way, they both did. Steve Jobs and Bill Gates stole the idea from Xerox. Xerox was using it as like some kind of internal tool and thought that they couldn't really make any money off of it because they were so... In fact, we've talked about this. Xerox was all trying to be a diversity company and focus on copy machines in a rapidly changing world, and they put all their rapidly changing world energy in making and diversifying the workforce and missed out on quite the opportunity. But yeah, I don't remember exactly. I know Steve Jobs for sure, but Steve Jobs and Bill Gates communicated back then. So I know for a fact Steve Jobs went and saw their software and stole it for his Apple OS. And I think Bill Gates was in on that somehow, or maybe he stole it from from Steve Jobs, so I don't know. Man of Low Moral Fiber says, do you make anything of the ever falling literacy rates? My literacy rate is dropping just trying to read your thing here. I assume a lot of stream did a lot of growing up on forums. I think you have some typos there. And message boards. A recent report said that 19 out of every 20 students in Detroit is illiterate, and more than half of the general population. I think the negative effect that Negroes have on whites is the classroom cannot be understated. Integrating schools didn't make Negroes smarter. It made whites dumber. Yeah, no, that's the thing, is they had to lower the bar or just not graduate anyone, and that affected the white students way more than it affected the black students. Whites will always have a civilizing effect on non-whites, never the other way around, ever. It's never happened. It's literally never happened. Slavery to False God says, why doesn't America found banks that would provide no-interest loans for us man-animals instead of just it being for Jews? Also, have you tried DeepSeek? What do you think of it? I don't understand your first thing. I think that they did try to do that, but then the Federal Reserve was created. DeepSeek is, as far as I can tell, just as woke as ChatGPT. Corn Pop the Bad Dude says, on the origin of the name Salem, to recognize this peaceful transition to the new government, the name of the settlement was changed to Salem. The Hellenized name of Shalom, the royal city of Melchizedek, which is identified with Jerusalem. They labeled women demonic and witches because they didn't worship Yahweh, and they burned them at the stake. And no, the tactics didn't change across the Atlantic. They were Jewish persecutions of European pagan women. Well, that's your interpretation of things. I disagree. I think that they were persecuting women that were basically the blue-haired problem women, the cat ladies of the time. My lying eye says, I got to set up the NBA All-Star game in San Francisco starting next Thursday. There's going to be Negroes hanging off limbs all over my area. Weather report, dark and cloudy. Chance of thunder. Very much a chance of thunder. And then Corn Pop the Bad Dude says, immigration suggests Iceland, Croatia is one out of 9 or 10 countries that doesn't have property tax. Also Poland. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I'm probably going to stick around here. But if it becomes legally infeasible, I guess what's my choice, right? Like I don't want to go to fucking prison, but I'm hoping that's not something that's right around the corner. But who knows? Yeah, I mean, look, fuck this Jewish country if it comes to it. Like if it comes down to it, that's what else are you supposed to do? All right, going over to Rumble. Let's take a look here at Rumble. Have to rewind it because the stupid thing didn't work, because it never does. Oh, we got some big donos here. Unreconstructed Rebel.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. Unreconstructed Rebel, of course, is very approving of the Merle Haggard song that we play at the beginning. It says, love the Merle Haggard. Cheers from Dixie, Devin. Well, I appreciate that. And, yeah, it is a good song. It's definitely an appropriate song. Then Unreconstructed Rebel again with a big dono.
Children, today we'll be reading the best Christmas ever. Our story begins with...
The Magic Negro.
Christmas tree on pure. did the snowman go?
The best Christmas ever.
All right, and Unreconstruct the Rebel again with a big dono. Obligatory Southern Pride worldwide. I definitely agree. Definitely agree. Southern Pride worldwide is much better than the white man's burden. In fact, that was the one, that was the half of the country that understood that the picture here on the screen is reversed from what it should be. The South understood that if anything, we should be the ones being carried in the basket. Or at least a hell of a lot of cotton, right? All right. Rupert says, what about civil rights for white people? Well, you know, it is what it is. Look, just try to get Trump to say white people. You know, good luck with that. Robigs says, thanks. Well, I appreciate that, Robigs. And scrolling down. Still, there we go. Evan says, I'm pulling an all-nighter and I need black pills to stay awake. Well, hopefully we've given you that extra dark black silk Folgers. Is what I was drinking earlier. My cup is empty. I feel like that's my favorite. As much as it's like super, like it's kind of goy sloppy coffee, Folgers. It's my favorite flavor right now. It's cheap, you know, works out. Scrolling down, keep going. We're almost there. There we go. Fancy Pants and MP5 says, what is your opinion on men's tiger striped panties? Can their use ever be justified in our struggle? Live free, motherfuckers. Tiger striped panties for men? I don't think any panties are acceptable for men. So I don't know what you're getting at there. If you're European, and you just don't know the terminology that would make sense to Americans. I don't know. Would tiger-striped boxers be appropriate in some instances? If they're boxers. I'll go there. I'll say, you can have tiger-striped boxers. Yeah, anything else is kind of gay. And then, of course, it wouldn't be a normal night without Negro Spritzer expressing his undying displeasure, his discomfort, and disapproval of all things not Albion, of all things of the darker persuasion, the members of our public from the dark continent that go by many names, including but not limited to Pickaninnies, Mushmouths, Alabama Wind Chimes, Gollywogs, Coons, Moon Cricket Slaves, Uncle Toms, Uncle Rickesis, I don't know that one, and etc., etc. And so there we have that as per usual. All right, I'll double check. All right, we got a couple more over on Odyssey, then we'll call it a night. My line eye says, would you rather separate or conform, speaking from USA citizen perspective? I would leave. If I could not legally, without putting my family or myself in danger, criticize Jews publicly, I would get the fuck out. Because that's, and look, and if things ever turned kinetic as a result of those decisions, after I left, I might come back and help out. That's all I would say. But yeah, there's some things I won't tolerate. I'll tolerate a lot. As long as I can still talk about the oppression, I feel like we're not in immediate danger. The second we become illegal, I'm not going to wait around for them to press charges. I'll start looking for places to be. Which would be difficult and financially tricky and everything else, paperwork tricky. Look, it's not, you know, but I feel like that would be, you'd have to do it. It's self-preservation at that point. I'm not gonna be the test case for something like that. My lying eyes says Neverant Synthwave or Devin Tracy remix. Not sure what the reference is there. Sluthouse says, I'm sure you addressed the anti-Semitism bullshit from Trump, but I'm going to replay this morning. I'm praying for you in the stream. Yep, very beginning of the stream, I got that. If you can't back it up on Odyssey, that's the one good thing about, although I think we're gonna exceed the limit. No, we'll still be under 4 hours. You can back it up, as long as you're under 4 hours on the stream length, you can back up Rumble right away. Odyssey, you have to wait till it uploads and does its bullshit. And then Nazi Dice, last but not least, says the cheap and shitty Ibanez guitars are made in China. The good, is that an I or an L?
Ibanez.
I guess it's an I. Guitars are made in China. The good ones are made in Japan. Yeah, well, like I said, a lot of Japanese electronics that used to be made in Japan they're moving a lot of manufacturing over to China. If it's like a craftsman kind of a thing, like a guitar, maybe they'll keep it in Japan. But, you know, a lot of people thought that about the stuff we built here, and that changed. All right, guys. Well, I really appreciate you stepping up tonight and help the show through the possibly rough situation that we'll have with the Hyper Chance in coming days, coming streams. But hopefully, like I said, it'll go nice and smooth. I'll let everyone know once I have it figured out. Tomorrow, I'll probably do a test stream to Entropy until I can get it to work. If you go to Entropy, look for Devin Stack. That's the name, at least, I use. So you should be able to follow from there. And I'll once I have a link to follow, I don't even know how that works, I'll post it on Telegram and on Twitter. So in the meantime, you guys know the drill. For Blackpilled, I am, of course, Devin Stack.
Okay, nobody moves, nobody gets hurt. Come on, keep your hands where I can see him. Bobby, get the money.
Okay, Nikki. All right, now, folks, just stay calm and everything will be okay. We don't want to hurt anybody. But as you know, these are hard and trying economic times we live in. And as the saying goes, when the going gets tough, the tough rob banks.
Hey, if you're robbing a bank, rob the bank. But we don't have to hear your sorry-ass jokes, too.
Shut up!
Hey, well, I gotta shut up. I got my hands in the air. What, I'm gonna say something to knock the gun out your hands?
Hey, come on. My brother said shut up, so just shut up, okay?
Ain't that a bitch? Uh-huh. You wanna come up here and rob our bank, plus tell us when we can and cannot talk?
Yeah.
Brother, the root to all the world's problems boils down to one thing. White men and their guns.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Nobody says anything else. Bobby, come on.
Yeah, come on, lady. Give me the cash. Let's
go. Won't you come back here and get it yourself?
That's right, sister. That's right. You're not a slave. Make them respect you.
Lady, I'm not kidding around.
Me neither. But if I know if I give you this money, next thing I know, I'm going to be arrested for abetting a robbery. No. And y'all be long gone.
Yeah. That's right. That's why they probably picked this bank. You know, they know people just going to be saying, oh, those people up there robbing themselves again. You know? They're probably coming to arrest all of us.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. That's it. I mean it this time. Everybody shut up and get on the floor. Bobby, let's go. Come on. On the floor, now.
I know one thing. I'm not getting on the floor in my good suit.
You get on the floor right now, or I'm going to blow
white
your
men with their guns. That is right there.
Yeah. Hey, come on, really. Right. It's not like that. This is not a racial thing. You guys just got the easiest bank to rob.
You guys? Yeah. Who is you guys?
Black people.
No, not black.
black people, you guys, this bank, you got the worst security system in town.
Well, how you know that?
Yeah.
Huh? How do you automatically assume that we got the worst bank because it's a black bank,
hey,
huh?
Hey, I'm not assuming nothing.
Well, then how do you know?
Because his father probably sold it to you.
Yeah, right. Your father probably said, oh, it's for the black bank? Just give him that special system we got in the back.
Hey, you guys, really? We cased your bank out for about a week.
Hey, come on. What the fuck are you doing, huh?
Hey, I just don't want them to think that we're bigots.
Who cares what they think?
Hey, I do, all right? I don't want these nice people to think that you and I are like some of the jerks we grew up with.
Hey, where you boys from?
Bay Ridge.
Have you lost your mind? You don't tell them where...
Come on, forget it. Let's go.
Now, if this was a white bank, they would have held us hostage.
Everybody okay? Oh, well, look who's here.
Hey, that's not fair. We got here as soon as we could.
Right. Yeah, sure you did.
Oh, you did.